Okay, all attendees are here. Again, welcome to the June meeting. I'm going to first ask Melissa to give us some technical notes, if you would, please, Melissa, our executive director. Oh, I'm sorry. I have a little more I'll read. I'm getting going. Yeah, we have to have a call for a quorum first. Yeah. Sherry, can you call for a quorum, please? Thank you.
President Sklar.
Here.
Vice President Anderson.
Here.
Commissioner Hostler-Carmison. Commissioner Murray. Commissioner Zavaleta.
Here.
Okay, so we do have a quorum, and I know Commissioner Murray will be joining us shortly. Just want to let everybody know that for the Zoom participants, you've been placed on mute, and when it's time for members of the public to speak and provide public comments, you'll receive instructions on how to indicate to do that, and we'll ask you to indicate what item you'd like to speak on, and speakers will be unmuted individually. So now I'd like to ask Melissa to give some quick technical notes.
Yeah, quickly, this is for folks who are participating in the Zoom webinar and calling in by phone. Please make sure that your phone number and your Zoom webinar are linked. If you logged into Zoom first and used the Call Me option, that linkage happened automatically. If you're joining by phone only and wish to speak to an agenda item, staff will identify you by the last three digits of your phone number. If you are having any technical difficulties with the meeting via Zoom, please contact IT@agpvideo.com. Again, that's IT@agpvideo.com or 805-772-2715 if you need to call. Again, that's 805-772-2715. And note that Zoom's chat feature is disabled for attendees, but commission staff may send messages to you regarding meeting management.
Okay, Melissa, will you also do the introductions and an overview of the meeting, please?
Yes. So joining you here today, I, of course, am Executive Director Melissa Miller-Henson, and to my right is your legal counsel, Mike Yon. To his right is Ari Corman, your wildlife advisor, and to his right is your Deputy Executive Director, David Thissell. At the staff table today, we have joining us Kelsey Laird and Jen Bacon, two of our analysts. We also have helping us behind the scenes, Sherry Fonbuena, David Haug, and Cynthia McKeith, three of our analysts, Caroline Newell, your environmental scientist, Amanda Specht, who is our 2026 Sea Grant Fellow, and Jessica Shaw, our seasonal clerk, as well as our new program manager, Gabe Lopez. Joining us in person today from our primary partner agency, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, I know Director Megan Hertel will be joining us. She's running a little bit late. But we also have Deputy Director for Wildlife and Fisheries Division, Chad Dibble, who is the official liaison for the department to the commission. We also have Deputy Director and Chief for Law Enforcement Division, Nathaniel Arnold. We have Deputy Director Josh Grover for the Ecosystem Conservation Division, also on your dais today. I believe we will also have joining us at different points during the meeting Wildlife Branch Chief Scott Gardner and potentially Wildlife or Fisheries Branch Chief Jay Rowan. So for those who are not familiar, welcome to a meeting of the California Fish and Game Commission and the 157th year of operation for the commission in partnership with California Department of Fish and Wildlife. We both originated from a board of fish commissioners in 1870. Commission's goals include preserving California's wildlife heritage and conserving our natural resources through informed decision-making. These meetings play a vital role in achieving those goals, and in that spirit, we provide the following information to support effective and efficient progress toward that end. We are operating under the Bagley-Keene Open Meeting Act, and these proceedings are being recorded and broadcast. In the unlikely event of an emergency, please note the location of the nearest emergency exits at your location. Items may be heard in any order pursuant to the determination of the presiding commissioner, which is President Sklar today. The amount of time for each agenda item may be adjusted based on time available and the number of speakers. And if you're here in this location at Sacramento, speaker cards do need to be filled out legibly and turned into staff before we start the agenda item. If you're online or on the phone, you'll receive additional instructions in a few moments. We will ask how many speakers we have before taking public comment. Please be prepared and listen closely for your name or phone number to be called. When you speak, please state your name and any affiliation. Be respectful and note that disruptions will not be tolerated. Time is precious, so please be precise. If you don't already and you would like to receive meeting agendas and regulatory notices about those subjects of interest to you, please visit the Commission's website at fgc.ca.gov and sign up for our electronic mailing list. You can remove yourself at any time by clicking on a link at the bottom of any of those messages. If you want the Commission to consider a regulation change, all petitions for regulation change must be submitted in writing on the authorized form, FGC1, which is available on the Commission's website or directly from staff. For members of the public, if you have access to the Internet and are not planning to make public comment today, you may listen to the meeting via our regular webcast by visiting the Commission website, again, fgc.ca.gov. That link is on the right-hand side of the page. And a reminder to please silence your mobile devices and computers today to avoid any interruptions. So I also want to share with the public, again, there's a number of ways to participate in the meeting. First, there's the webcast, which I just mentioned. Those watching remotely and not planning to comment can use that. There's also in-person participation. Again, a reminder, speaker cards should be turned in before the start of the agenda item. And then third, obviously, you can participate by Zoom webinar phone. You will be asked to raise your hand at the beginning of the agenda item if you're on Zoom or phone. So listen carefully for that announcement to raise your hand, as the opportunity will be brief. For each item, the Commission will take public comment in person first and then via Zoom webinar and phone. Thank you, President Sklar.
Thank you, Melissa. First, before we begin, I'd like to ask any elected officials and tribe representatives to identify themselves and do so by coming up to the podium and introducing yourselves in person or by raising your hand on Zoom. So if there's anybody in the room, are there any elected officials or tribal members or representative of tribes in the room? And share anybody online raising their hand?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead and let that person speak, please. And could you introduce yourself, tell us your affiliation and what item you're here to speak on?
Lisa Sherman, go ahead, please.
Hoka, Lisa Sherman, from the Ipai Nation of Santa Isabel. Thank you.
Great. What item are you here to speak on today?
I'm just listening. Thank you, though.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you for being here today. Appreciate that. With that, good morning, Commissioner Murray. I want to note that she's here and is in her chair. We have a quorum. Our first item is our consent items. Ari's going to lead us off on that. I'm going to give the call for public comment on items 12 through 17. If you'd like to provide public comment, please raise your hand in Zoom or press star 9 on your phone. The queue will be open for 3 minutes, so we'll close at 8:43. Again, please raise your hand no later than 8:43 to comment on any consent item. Items are placed on the consent calendar because they are expected to be routine and non-controversial. Consent calendar items are generally voted upon without discussion, but the commissioners can choose to remove and discuss an item, including when requested by a member of the public or staff. Again, if you'd like to comment on any of these consent items, please raise your hand no later than 8:43. We're going to break the consent items into two groups, 12 through 14 and 15 through 17, and we'll wait just a second to see if any hands raised. Is there anybody in the room who was putting up a speaker card?
No.
Okay. You want to speak on the consent items? No, that's later. That's not for now. And Sherry, is anybody raising their hand online?
So far, no.
Okay, we'll give another minute or so. And again, we're going to take 12 through 17. I understand that Commissioner Vice President Anderson is going to recuse himself from these items. Yeah. Anybody raising their hand yet, Sherry?
Well, we had one go up and go back down again, no.
Okay, we'll give another minute or so because we told them we would, but I don't think we're going to see anybody there. And then we'll look for a motion on items 12 through 14, and I think there's two motions in the agenda for that.
And we do have one hand raised now.
Okay, let's let them speak, please. 2 minutes, please.
Sorry, getting my mouse to cooperate here.
No worries.
Jeff Edwards, go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning. My name is Jeff Edwards, and this is more of an inquiry. I looked at the agenda pretty closely, but my main interest, and perhaps you can inform me, is any action with respect to the Moro manzanita. That's the Arctostaphylos moroensis. That's what I'm interested in speaking on. I'm not sure if it's part of this item.
Yeah, no, it's not part of this item. It's
No, they should speak under general public comments. So you are receiving the department's petition, status review, I believe, at this meeting.
Right, just a receipt.
On the list, but it's just receipt.
Okay.
And so the next meeting, you will actually have that as a full agenda item.
Okay.
But if they'd like to speak to it today, general public comment.
Yeah, so you'd speak on general public comment at the very end of the day. It's item number, just for your purposes, it's item number 26, 27? What is it? 27.
I appreciate that direction. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. Okay, so with that, any more speaker sharing?
No.
Okay, can we have a motion on items 12 through 14?
I'll move that the commission adopts the staff recommendations for items 12 through 14 on the consent calendar.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Zavaleta, seconded by Commissioner Murray. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Zavaleta?
Aye.
Commissioner Murray?
Aye.
And
President Sklar. Aye.
Vice President Anderson is not.
No, he stepped out of the room. He put him down as recused for this. So I vote aye, and it passes unanimously. And let's ask Commissioner Vice President Anderson back in the room. And there were no comments on the items that you are voting on. So nothing. There are no comments on any of them, actually. So can we have a motion on items 15 through 17?
I'll move that the commission adopts the staff recommendations for items 15 through 17 on the consent calendar.
Second.
Okay, motion made by Commissioner Zavaleta, seconded by Vice President Anderson. Roll call, please, Sherry.
Commissioner Zavaleta?
Aye.
Commissioner Murray?
Aye.
Vice President Anderson?
Aye.
President Sklar?
Aye. Passes unanimously as well. Thank you all. That brings us to our first discussion and action item, which is the Alexander Dairy PLM. First, David, could you please call for public comment on this?
Thank you, President Sklar. If you'd like to make public comment on item 18, Alexander Dairy PLM, please raise your hand now, no later than 8:47. If you're on the Zoom webinar, please use the raised hand function. If you're on the phone only, please use the *9 function to raise your hand once. If you'd like to speak, if you raise your hand, please do that once. If you press *9 again, you will lower your hand. Again, if you raise your hand, please leave your hand raised. Do not lower it. Staff will lower your hand, lower all the hands all at once. Again, if you'd like to speak on item 18, Alexander Dairy PLM, please raise your hand now, no later than 8:47. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, David. And Melissa, will you introduce this item? We'll follow that by Chad Dibble. And then we have a presentation from the dairy from Chris Howard. And we'll give him 10 minutes for that before we go to public comment.
Thank you, President Sklar. This agenda item, as you may recall, in June of last year, you had before you a request for a renewal of a five-year private lands management license and management program. At that time, staff also noted that the commission had received information suggesting some behavior or activities that were disconcerting to some program participants on an adjacent property that were hunting. There were also some previous comments that had been received over the years that staff shared with you. Ultimately, you chose to renew that PLM for a single year of that license and asked the Alexander Dairy PLM to meet a number of conditions before coming back this year for potential consideration of the balance of that five-year plan. So here today you have, in addition to that, you had requested that the department look into the allegations that had been made about the dairy and the PLM operations. And the department did that and has presented to you in your meeting materials a memo outlining its recommendation, as well as including an exhibit that has a an abbreviated version of the full LED report that was presented to the director. And so you have that information. In your materials, you also have materials from Alexander Dairy PLM in support of its renewal, including a number of letters of support. You also have a number of materials in your supplemental handouts related to this agenda item as well. And so today, you have the PLM coming to you requesting to continue and approve the full 5-year license. I will note that in the meeting materials, there are apparently 2 tables. There may be some confusion for folks. One of the tables that outlines the management program is for the 1 year that you approved last year, which is only a portion of the full 5-year. And so for those who may be looking at the habitat improvements column in particular, there are only 2 items that were identified for the first year. And then there are additional items. If you look at the full table on page 836 of your binder, that has the full list of habitat improvements that were identified in the management plan for the full 5-year plan, license and plan. I'm also going to ask your legal counsel to just provide you with a little bit of context for your decision making today.
Great, thanks. Mike, do we join that first, or do we want to go to Chad first?
If it's okay, I'll go ahead.
Mike, go ahead.
And it's just general context setting about what the legal posture is of what we're doing. First, I just want to highlight not to be inflammatory, but this is not a criminal trial, and I say that for 2 reasons. One, there's several parts of comments that you've received already in your written comments make statements about potential allegations of criminal conduct, and also similarly, people are making comments talking about like evidentiary standards and who has provided what, all as if it were a context of a criminal proceeding. Whether or not there's any criminal activity associated with this is beyond the scope of your decision. And just to make that explicit, this isn't an administrative hearing either. You're not making a decision about revocation or suspension of a license. You're making a decision about whether or not to, at an administrative standard, making a decision about whether or not to approve the plan associated with a new license application. And based on that, your standard for the decision is just to determine whether it's more likely than not for any of the factors that you feel you need to make a determination about. And that's all I wanted to say.
Great. Thank you, Scott. Oh, and I just want to mention and welcome Director Hurdle. Good morning. Okay, Chad, please go ahead. Deputy Director Dibble.
Thank you. Thank you for the time to speak on this item. As noted at the June 2025 meeting and in light of complaints that had been raised regarding Alexander Dairy's PLM and the surrounding share hunt opportunities, you asked the department to investigate any past and current concerns. The department's law enforcement division concluded that investigation, and we have provided a memo to you along with our recommendation regarding continuation of a 5-year PLM for Alexander Dairy. The investigation revealed what our LE, or law enforcement personnel, believed to be a pattern of activity and behavior by Alexander Dairy personnel consistent with the intended goal of altering the natural behavior and or movement of elk in the Fort Dick area. Based on our investigation, department has recommended to not renew the PLM license. For some additional context, in the last decade, we have seen increased elk growth in elk populations in Del Norte County. Over the same time period, the department and the commission have worked with the county to address conflict issues. As evidence, the Alexander Dairy submitted testimony for today's hearing from February 2025 Del Norte County Fish and Game Commission meeting, recalling many of those discussions and suggested steps forward. In continuing those efforts to resolve these concerns, you will recall that most recently, in 2024, we worked with you to develop regulations that designated elk conflict zones, Del Norte County being one of them. Through these efforts, we have increased 23 general hunt tag allocations in the area, increased the number of antlerless landowner tags by 56, and increased the number of bull and antlerless tags in the share program from 41 to 59, respectively. That's an increase of 179 tags in this area. Today, you will most likely hear from supporters of Alexander Dairy and their PLM program. As the department does understand that PLMs can have benefit to individuals and the businesses outside just the licensee. You may also hear about the positive and beneficial projects that Alexander Dairy has done for wildlife on this property over the years. The department does not dispute that the dairy has implemented projects that support many types of wildlife. However, An objective in the Alexander Dairy Management Plan is to encourage free movement of elk and other wildlife throughout the PLM. And as an example, actions to replace exclusion fencing with single wire fencing are included in the PLM for this exact objective. Title 14, Section 601 of the California Code of Regulations requires that the department determine whether the licensee has fulfilled the obligations prescribed in the management plan and to make a recommendation regarding continuation of the PLM license. Section 601 further provides that a PLM must actively encourage the propagation, conservation, and wise use of wildlife, and that failure to comply with Section 601 or a license issued pursuant to it may result in denial of an application. The investigation from LAD illustrates concerns as it pertains to the free movement of elk on the property and consequently contradicts implementation of the management plan as intended. The department believes it is our responsibility to uphold the integrity of the PLM program and therefore makes the recommendation in front of you. I appreciate the time to speak on this.
Great. Thank you, Deputy Director. Sherry, real quickly, how many speakers do we have on this?
Seven.
Okay, great. That's just helpful. Thank you. I want to invite now for the dairy, Chris Howard, who's been here many times. I'm going to call you Chris rather than supervisor because I know you're here in your personal capacity, but welcome.
That's
you.
Correct.
You have 10 minutes to talk about this.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I actually tried to keep my presentation to five, so if there's additional time for questions, I'll certainly be willing to do that. If you could go to the first slide, which is up already. Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Chris Howard. I've worked alongside the Alexander family for over 15 years as a conservationist and a wildlife and fisheries biologist. As part of your agenda package, we have sent you a full presentation disputing the department's findings, statements from hunters, nonprofits, adjacent landowners, plus supporting documentation, all in an effort to unwind 9 months of an investigation, which has been given to the commission in a summary document without context or proof. Today, I want to speak to you plainly as someone who lives in this county and knows the Alexanders and this land. Slide two, please. Let's start with what's actually in front of you. Over more than 276 elk hunts adjacent to the Alexander property between 2018 and 2024. That was the period of the investigation. The department points to 6 disputed observations. From those 6, it concludes there is a pattern. But there is not one citation, there is not one conviction. At your own May 14th Wildlife Resources Committee meeting, the department standard for removing an operator may require a Fish and Game Code or Title 14 conviction. The Alexanders have none. Slide three, please. So I ask you to take a look closely at this case for denial. It rests on a 4-page factual summary, quotes unquote. Behind that summary sits a 9-month investigation, 60-plus pages, over 200 phone calls, and 140 interviews that the department will not share with the Alexanders or this commission. The summary leaves out the statements of no conflict from share hunters, from Northwest hunters, and from neighboring landowners. And for just about every one of those 6 findings, the farm has an explanation and a named witness ready to testify. These are not facts, commissioners. These are the opinions of a few understandably frustrated hunters. Slide four, please. Now, I'm a practical person, so let me put these allegations to the test. If Alexander employees were really hurting or harassing elk to keep them off neighbors' hunting grounds, then those neighboring hunts would fail. They don't. The Fort Dick share hunt has almost 100%+ success rate. Every program around the farm, share, Northwestern, landowner tags, and the PLM itself is succeeding. A genuine pattern of interference would show up as failed hunts. It simply hasn't. Slide five, please. And here's what doesn't make it into the headlines. What this family has actually built. Over 11 years, the Alexanders have done exactly what Section 601 asks for, to actively encourage the propagation, the conservation, and wise use of wildlife. 25 acres of new wetlands, at Coho Salmon Fish Passage, at Velocity Refuge on Tryon Creek for Coho Salmon, more than 11,000 feet of fencing removed and replaced with single wire so elk and other wildlife can freely move across these lands. Water troughs, nesting boxes, raptor perches, every single project the management plan has called for has either been completed or is in progress. Slide 6, please. And it isn't just the family saying so. The department's own Region 1 biologists recognized the restoration work and approved the 25 through 29 plan. And then on June 1st, those same field biologists were instructed to stop communicating with us. The acting Region 1 director has confirmed that the recommendation to deny rests solely on the law enforcement summary, not on the conservation record. CDFW staff, who know the land best, support this work. Slide 7. Let me be candid with you about what is really going on. This is an elk management conflict, as Mr. Dibble has stated. It's not about a law enforcement case. It's not about a 601 compliance action. Our herd has grown from around 40 animals to over 300. That creates real pressure on our farmers, on our neighbors, on our highways. And all through this, the Alexanders have been part of the solution. They have given the department unlimited access to call and manage the herds since 2015. Wildlife staff have monitored there almost every week. Slide 8, please. So my ask for you is a simple one. Approve the 5-year renewal. Allow us to continue to donate tags to conservation groups every year. The elk move freely on this land the family has opened up to them. The elk harvest data clears the Alexander employees. Alexander has met Section 601 requirements for 11 years running, and the case to deny comes down to 6 opinions, which aren't fact, with 0 citations, 0 violations and convictions behind them. Commissioners, Alexander Dairy has created a place where wildlife generally thrives and where our hunters keep right on succeeding. That is the partnership this program was designed to reward. And I ask you on behalf of the county, Alexander Dairy, to let them keep doing it. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Chris. Commissioners, any questions for Chris? Okay, let's go to public comment, and then we'll come back to the commissioners. Sherry Gooden, please call the 2 minutes each.
Will Justin Nunes please approach the lectern in the room?
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, commissioners. I wanted to start by sharing a perspective from my daily life up in the community. Every day I drive these roads with my kids, and no, we always get to see the elk no matter what. For my children, myself, it's a constant reminder how deeply connected these animals are to the land. The elk always appear happy and content and calm because they are in an environment where they are secure. To give you an idea of a daily reality of this land, on a recent Monday morning, around 9:30, my kids and I were driving a 3-mile stint. We saw 24 Alexander vehicles, 5 tractors, 3 semi-trucks, 4 ATVs, 6 pickups, 3 irrigation vehicles, and 3 bicycle irrigators. This is a bustling, fully operational working farm, and every single one of those employees had an individual, independent job that they were focusing on. Because it is an ag operation, they are constantly traveling across the public roads and miles of gravel lanes. You are bound to see a farm traffic, farm employee, everywhere you look. It's just standard daily operations. The idea that this is meant to disrupt wildlife contradicts my own firsthand experience. I was fortunate enough to be drawn for the Fort Dick Share bull hunt in 2023, and the reason elk stayed put was not because anyone was hurting or harassing them on the property. The elk simply did not want to leave. They were entirely content to stay right where they were. After sitting and watching the elk sit still in one area 14 and a half hours over 2 days, I admit, I became frustrated. But that was apparently a hunter's frustration. When you step back and look at the elk's perspective, they have a home where they are comfortable, safe, and secure. I was successful in my hunt like the many hundreds of hunters. It just takes time. The same scenario plays out every single year. Countless hunters sit in their vehicles for hours, sometimes days, staring at the elk, hoping that they'll eventually move off the property. The elk aren't being herded or manipulated by employees. They have simply chosen to call Alexander property their home.
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up. Your time is up.
Ask CDFW, whose staff entire job involves monitoring the herds, which have multiple collars on them, where they call their self
okay,
home.
That's it. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Will Zoom attendee identified as TD go ahead, please?
Hello, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Taylor, Del Norte County resident, avid hunter. I actually drew a share tag on Fort Dick this year. Cow tag was successful. I just kind of wanted to follow up. I noticed that we just passed, I believe it was in agenda items 16 and 17, I believe. I'm on my phone, so I can't pull it up. In regards to 601, and I think, you know, the goal of that and all the farms, ranches, dairies, property owners in the PLM program, the goal is to enrich the land for wildlife. And I think, you know, in regards to Alexander Dairy, why are the elk there? Because the land is beneficial for these elk. They don't have a reason to move off the land. Again, being an elk hunter this year and being around hunting in general, I drew a share tag for a pig hunt down at the East Park Reservoir. Hunt, unfortunately, was cut short. You know, a shotgun went off when I was stalking in on a pig. Frustrating, for sure. But was it someone else's fault? No, it's the frustrations of hunting. Very similar here. You have hunters who come from out of town. I was a part of my hunt this year with two other hunters. They're actually both successful from Modesto and Bakersfield. They're driving 10 hours. It's frustrating watching the elk not move from a land that there's no need to move from when the Tallawah Dunes State Park is right behind, the Alexander Dairy is right in front. There's not necessarily a need for those elk to move, and they do move, right? They do move freely around. Again, it's a working dairy, as the other commentators have said. But in regards to passing the other PLM tags, you know, with brush piles and whatnot, I've seen firsthand what the dairy has done in regards to bridges, in regards to those single wire fences, to not only allow those elk to move, but to really encourage them to move as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Tina Marie Schaffsma, go ahead, please.
Hi, my husband Jim Skosma will be the one making the statement today.
Yeah, we've been working with Alexander's Dairy for a long time. We've been on the PLM program since 94 here in Trinity County. I've got to work with a lot of other PLMs, but Alexander Dairy has done more for the elk up there than anybody else. I mean, just like the last commentator said, those elk, there's no reason to move. And we had something here that they said we had pulled some rigs out to stop elk, but we had an archer sitting in a blind waiting for those elk. And there's no reason for them to leave that permanent pasture to go on to some dry land stuff. So anyway, we're all for them, and they've done an excellent job. And I don't know, I guess that's about all I have to say, so thank you.
Vanessa Nunez, go ahead, please.
What's that?
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Vanessa Nunez. I'm the daughter and dairy manager of the Alexander Dairy. As farmers, our lives are tied to the land, and our commitment to stewardship is proven by our actions, not just our words. I want to address the unfair standards being applied to our PLM renewal. In a May 19th letter, Director Hertel stated the department's aim is to ensure programs represent the best intentions for wildlife and harvest opportunities. The data shows that we have achieved exactly that. Over the last 10 years, the Fort Dick and Del Norte Southside share hunts achieved an 88% success rate compared to the statewide aggregate average of 56. If the goal is truly to provide premier harvest opportunities, our track record represents the gold standard of the PLM program. Director Hertel's letter referenced Section 601, citing basic habitat examples like brush piles or planting trees. We have invested hundreds of thousands of dollars into large-scale transformative habitat improvements for both fish and wildlife. Our efforts far exceed the standard expectations, and they outmatch the actions and the other renewals that you're placing today. We have delivered ecological work. Why then are we being singled out? The staff summary claims our proposed management plan will not satisfy the intended benefits to wildlife. However, this exact plan was negotiated and agreed upon with your Region 1 staff. It was Region 1 staff who insisted on focusing on the bird boxes and English ivy removal. Our original proposed actions were substantial, constructing two coho salmon velocity refuges and reconstructing 11,600 feet of wildlife-friendly fencing. What has changed within the department to suddenly render a mutually agreed upon high impact plan inconsistent? Finally, I must address a troubling contradiction in the director's May 19th letter. One sentence references a factual record, while the very next sentence references alleged conduct and potential violations. You cannot have it both ways. These are not facts. They are unsubstantiated allegations and opinions from a handful of frustrated hunters spanning a six-year period. Please judge our renewal by the same objective standards applied to every other farm and ranch this morning.
Christian, go ahead, please.
Hi there. Yeah, my name is Christian Alexander, and I'm also a farm manager on the Alexander Dairy. And one particular case where I was named or where I was involved was that someone complained about was early in 2018, December 16th of 2018. I naively told a hunter not to shoot a certain bull, the biggest bull in the herd, thinking that, you know, I was able to save that for other reasons, and learned later that day from Victoria Barr that nope, with the share hunt, when we were involved in the share hunt, that, you know, the unlimited tag is unlimited. So I helped take, butcher that bull, and the hunter, you know, got the big bull that day, and it was a beautiful photo. I just looked at the photo just yesterday. And so anyhow, that was one that got reported. And so I just wanted to say, learned my lesson that day, and that never happened after that. So thank you.
Returning to in-person speakers, Blake Alexander, please approach the lectern.
Hi. Well, first of all, thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak here. I kind of wanted to start back in 1994 when we first bought that land up there, and we moved up there to raise our five kids. I found myself in 92 in Washington, D.C., sitting down with Secretary of Interior Manny Lujan and six undersecretaries. I was a part of a California Ag Leadership Program where I kind of got enlightened and aware and open to the other side of I guess our environment. You know, I grew up as a farmer, and then there's the environmental side, and so I just came home, and I remember telling our team at the time, which was my smaller, my wife, and the employees that we had at the time, that, you know, we weren't going to chase the Aleutian geese. We're going to find a new solution, and that was an extremely successful thing. We spent the next 16 years managing land for the geese, managing state park land as well as ours, which eventually led to the successful delisting of an endangered species. And we find tremendous pride in that. Then the geese kind of went on and now are integrated into our, I guess, California northern environment. And then the elk came. And the year that there was 43 elk, before that there was like 20 and then 6 or 9. And I remember the first year they came over, they crossed the river and came to our land, and we absolutely welcomed them. And we still do that. We do that at every turn. And we find great pride in that just because I enjoy it. I'm not a hunter. I don't even like to watch people. I would never witness a harvest or even slaughtering. I'm just not into that. My life has been to keep animals healthy and alive. And so in 2015, the department asked us to help manage the herd. That was through this PLM program. We wanted to manage the lame elk because that was really, really bothering us. Okay, thank you. And so we've worked with folks on the ground, with the department at both levels, not just law enforcement, but really about managing this whole situation. The reason the elk population has dropped at our herd is because about 120 or 30 have been taken out because they're lame. And that's just a really sad thing. And I have all kinds of issues with that as to how we would treat them if they were our animals.
I'm going to need you to wrap up in a minute.
Okay, so I just want to emphasize that we bought almost 1,800 acres across the river 5 years ago. First thing we did was start taking elk down, elk fencing down. There was no elk on that land. Last year there was 53 all winter. This spring I see little ones out there. We are welcoming the elk. We have no reason to chase the elk. We just have. It's never been a subject with me and my employees or management to talk about moving the elk in any way, shape, or form. It's a stupid thing. It's like stirring soup. It just doesn't make a difference. So, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Alexander.
Okay.
Sherry, any more speakers? I believe that was the last speaker.
That concludes our speakers who indicated they wanted to speak while the queue was open.
Okay, I'm going to make a couple comments, and then I'd love to hear from my fellow commissioners on this. There's some issues that come before us that are joyful. There's some that become many that come before us that are difficult. This is particularly difficult. This is not what we want. We come here to do. And for me personally, I mean, I have A2 milk in my refrigerator as we speak, as well as whipped cream from this dairy. I'm a loyal customer, and this isn't an evidentiary hearing. I don't want to speak for Chief Arnold in the Law Enforcement Division, but I think I can say that. Particularly because this isn't a courtroom, and because they've interviewed people who have a right not to have their information disclosed, their summary is the way this should be done. It shouldn't be their full file on the effort. If in some courts that can be made public, but even then, not always. And I see Chief Arnold shaking his head. That's the case. We fully trust our law enforcement. They don't have an agenda here. They don't. And so I don't think that any aspersions on the summary are really valid. It's heartbreaking to have to make this, even talk about this right now. We have to go on what we've got. This isn't also the end of the day. I mean, there's an opportunity, depending on what we do today, to correct these things. But I've also read some really troubling things about the dairy that I think you've got some challenges in terms of being more transparent and showing what's going on there. And I know that's not what this is about today, but I can't help talk about what I've read and seen. I want to learn more about it. I want to see, the dairy do better in terms of if it's just PR, then work on that. If there's some factual stuff behind it, then work on that, I think, for the sake of all of us, including your customers. So with that, I invite my fellow commissioners to weigh in, and then we'll decide what to do. Vice President Anderson, please.
As an avid hunter and somebody that's actually involved in the business, I just want to say, well, let me start with saying my dad was a cop. So I am 1,000% supportive of our law enforcement and the investigation that they do. What troubles me as I went ahead and read this is I understand the difficulty of managing hunters, and I understand that from time to time they complain and they're frustrated. I have run a club that does put and take birds. And, somebody will ask, hey, I'd like to have 10 birds put down. We put down 10 and they only see one. And then they come back in and they complain and they claim that I didn't put the birds out. And so we've now gone to taking pictures to make sure that they realize that we put the birds out. So I understand the claim from you, Chris, that, these hunters are frustrated, right? And if you go all the way up there and you don't get them, it's going to happen. However, as Eric just said, the law enforcement agency doesn't have ulterior motives. And there was some facts there. And the last thing I want to do is go ahead and vote against additional hunting opportunities. But for whatever reason, there's a disconnect. And I'm having a hard time figuring that out and how you got to this point, right? And, you know, if there's something more that you can give me, you know, it would really help me sort of make this final decision because, you know, I want to go ahead and do what's right for the dairy, and I understand it. And as somebody that, you know, in the past has had run-ins with activists over various issues, I understand your pain at the dairy and some of the other things that you guys have gone through. But, you know, they didn't go out with an agenda when they started this investigation and say, hey, we're going to put these guys out of business. I just don't believe that. So.
Yeah, I just want to echo that, you know, this is a difficult issue and case, and I guess I have a question for the department. I mean, I'm sitting with a bunch of things. There's no question that the dairy has made substantial positive contributions to habitat restoration and wildlife. So I think whatever we decide today is not a reflection of that. I want to say that because I think, you know, this is a much more specific thing we're weighing in on. So it's not to negate all of the accomplishments the dairy has made. And I think I'm kind of weighing this more likely than not question and curious to ask whether the department can just share whether it typically receives complaints of a similar nature, you know, to those at issue here about other participating properties in the PLM program, whether it ever has.
I've only been in this chair for 4 years, involved in this program, overseeing these efforts. In looking into this, obviously we get calls or concerns, and we typically work with our regions who are on the ground to figure that out. I can think of one other instance where we had discussed removal of somebody from a PLM that's in my mind. Mm-hmm. It wasn't in this sort of a situation, though. It was for other reasons. This isn't something we typically get. I think, like it's been stated, most PLM owners are doing what they can. They have a shared interest, a coexistence, if you will. There's an intent. There's a support role for wildlife, first and foremost. And I don't think that's different here. I think, truly believe the dairy does care for the wildlife. I think they've shown actions that have resulted in that. I think there's, from our findings, there's some incentives there that maybe fall into this category. And I think that's where we're landing on this. It's, again, the repeatedness of it, the continued of it. These statements, as you recall from the record, have been brought to the department's attention. That was told to us. So part of this investigation was information we had heard before, and I think that's where you're getting at is how often does this happen? We look into it. We talk to the folks. Kind of sounds like maybe this is a one-off or what have you. However, we saw multiple incidents, and it lines up, and that's where sort of the investigation points to.
Yeah, thanks, Deputy Director Dibble. And go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was just going to say for the law enforcement side, because we're kind of splitting on PLM and then the actual investigation. Same, you know, as these come in, from my recollection, not a lot, but when we get the complaints, we investigate.
Mm-hmm. Great, thanks. Yeah, and just to be clear, I'm not asking that question to question the investigation in any way, because I support the work that LED does and, you know, understand that it's happening without bias. I think it's just helpful, like, as a backdrop to sort of highlight that there are some repeated incidents of like people reaching out to the department about this particular property, and that's not something that occurs typically, and that helps me sort of put into context, you know, whether there's something different that needs to be addressed here. So I appreciate that extra information. Yeah, thanks.
Commissioner Murray, please.
Oh yeah, Vice President, did you have something to add?
Go ahead.
Okay, mine's a little long. Bringing the legal lens. I mean, first, I just want to thank you for the positive contributions to habitat and to restoration. You know, these are really two separate things, and us considering a denial of the application doesn't undo that good work that has been done. So I hear us all saying we are grateful for that work that has been done, and we we see it. You know, this isn't punitive. It's not a suspension. We're considering a denial at this time, to President Sklar's point. You know, it's not forever necessarily. But Section 601 does say that a PLM must actively encourage propagation, conservation, wise use of the wildlife, and that a failure to comply with Section 601 or a license issued pursuant to it may result in a denial of an application. So the alleged conduct that we see in the compliance report, which is really comprehensively outlined, and I want to thank you all for, it wasn't that long ago that we said, please go look into this, and you came back with something really comprehensive. You know, there are these potential violations of Fish and Game Code Section 2009, interference with hunting, Code Section 3003.5, pursuing, driving, herding mammals with a motor vehicle, and Title 14, California Code of Regulations, Section 251.1, harassing, herding, or driving wildlife. Those are the exact kinds of violations that were, or events that we read described in this compliance report, and several of them are harassing in nature. You know, we've all read the report, but you know, pickups. You know, I heard in the early presentation talking about just like all the staffing. You know, all the people working at this working farm, and so of course there are pickups and ATVs and SUVs and people actively working at this dairy farm. But there are just so many events described. You know, where we've got a pickup that's there for 15 minutes, and then, you know, hearing a gunshot, and after which the pickups drive away. We've got three individuals exiting a pickup, walking toward a herd of elk, walking in circles, and then, you know, the elk changing course. The event that's described, being told that the $10,000 would be required to harvest the bull elk. And maybe it is like a series of mistakes. Maybe a lot of mistakes have been made because there are a lot of people working on this working farm, and people are still figuring out, you know, how to engage in this program. So maybe there's still learning to be done, and I hope that learning will continue to be done and that the farm will do better. But it doesn't sound just like frustrated hunters to me, and it does seem more likely than not. And so for me, the denial does make sense at this time. Given the standard we have and given just the series of events that we have before us in the compliance report.
Can you give Chris?
I'm going to. Do you have anything else? I was going to give Chris a minute or two. Just briefly, please, if you want to respond.
Yeah, I want to make sure to address the letter that was sent to you by Director Hertel. And Director's only been in the position for a few months, so granted, it likely came from staff. And so I'm not going to falter for any of this. Addressing 601, that was part of this. We have done everything to propagate and conserve wildlife on this property. To say we haven't, which we're saying we haven't, when we say the removal, to say we haven't, that puts us squarely in the position that we're not meeting the obligations. In front of you today, those habitat improvements from 2025 to 2029 far exceed the other PLMs that you just passed in habitat improvement opportunity. The law enforcement action, we heard today a pattern being cited from six instances. One of those instances, Director, didn't even take place near the PLM property, a shot, which we have still no information on. Not even close. Another one, and I got to ask, did you see any of the letters, 16 letters from adjacent landowners, hunters? Did you read those? Right? They address all of what we've discussed today in those six instances. There was over 176 hunts. To suggest that there was a pattern is not fair to us. That's not factual.
Can I ask a question, you know, with regard to this program and how it's evolved on the property? Do you have SOPs and standards that you train your employees with? And if so, could you talk a little bit about that?
I am really not the right person, but the answer is 100% yes. The instance was described, the videotape, which you guys was brought to your attention last year, right? That was an employee literally protecting our livestock from an elk in rut ripping fencing out in the chicken coops. He did that as his own volition. But when that hunter actually physically talked to Blake Alexander later, he came to talk to us. Our employee, we told our employee that's not okay. He wrote a letter and a statement, which is in your package, explaining what he was trying to do to protect our livestock. But yes, we have SOPs and we follow them very closely. And our goal, again, is to conserve and propagate wildlife on our property, to work with nature and not against it.
Thank you. I'm kind of going back to, I guess, Samantha's summary that, you know, there's just allocations lined up. My understanding is that, you know, you guys are doing your job. You've been fed particular information and haven't seen the entire picture. One of the allegations was a white pickup going out. I don't know when it happened and all that because I don't really care, but it was me. And one of the letters came in. It's from our neighbor who watched me because he doesn't really, he works and lives kind of right in the middle of our ranch, and he observes and coaches share hunters and all this. And so he's really attuned to what's going on. And apparently, I drove out in the middle of a field to see a flag that was new or something, and I didn't know why or what it was. I just drive out my little Toyota, and I either got out and hung out, and then I left. Apparently, that got reported that I was out there chasing elk. I have no idea where the elk were in regards to what I was doing that day, but that's one of six. The other one was, you know, the chicken ranch, Juan, who thought he was doing the best thing, and he was, because we have electric netting around these chicken coops, 18 of them, and the elk were getting tangled. And so that, you know, those are misunderstandings that have happened over this last 8 or 10 year period, and there is no systemic abuse. We are not harassing, and I'm just here honestly telling you that. In regards to the other issues, there's a lot more I'd love to tell you about that you brought up.
Thank you, Blake.
Thanks.
I have never seen an example of law enforcement having an agenda on these things, and also I've never seen them bring forward something that's on a PLM before in my, I guess, now 11 years here. So we have to give the burden is on you, frankly, because, you know, they have no reason to tell us anything other than the truth and their interpretation of it. And they've been around a long time. Chad may have only been in his position for 4 years, but he's been with the department for a long time. Chief Arnold's been with us for a long time. They both have the most incredible integrity. I mean, just right up there with the top people I've ever met. And they've done this thoroughly, and so we've got to put some trust in them. This isn't the end of the road. You know, if we vote not to deny, use the next year to lay it out and prove us wrong and or show what you've done to correct it. But I'm going to have to vote for denial based on what's before us today, and it gives me no pleasure. Any other commissioners? I think we've given plenty of time. And so, and I guess we'd say, you know, listen, we know hunters, and human beings can say things that are, you know, they're their perspective. And I also have run large operations. It ain't easy. And yours is different than the large operations I run. Mine were in a building. Yours are, you know, over hundreds of acres. I know it's hard, and appreciate the question about standard operating procedures. You know, keep working at it. And again, as Commissioner Murray said, this is not in any way a judgment on all the good things that you've done. We're aware of that, and we wait a minute. So. With that, fellow commissioner.
Yeah, and I just want to say, you know, I don't believe that you're out trying to manipulate the elk. I really don't. I mean, you know, running an operation myself, I realize how difficult it is, and I realize that people can interpret, you know, a lot of things a lot of different ways. The problem is that the fact pattern, you know, and the investigation speaks for itself. And the last thing I want to do is go ahead and vote against. But, you know, to me, you know, the facts are, and I would hope that you don't look at this as a, you know, a no forever. It's basically based on these facts. We have to go ahead and make a decision today. But, you know, I look at all the great work that you guys have done. I don't want you to stop doing that work. And I want you to, in my personal opinion, is to come, please come back if we vote this way, and I'm going to vote to support the department.
Yeah, and I just want to say, I mean, I really appreciate the comments from my fellow commissioners on this. I mean, I think you're hearing, you know, sincerity and just pleasure with having even be here right now. So with that, I'll make the motion because it's a difficult one, but I move that we do we actually need a motion on the disapproval? Yeah, we do. Okay, I move that we disapprove the requested 5-year PLM renewal license and management plan.
Second.
Motion made by me, seconded by Commissioner Murray. Roll call, please.
President Sklar?
Aye.
Commissioner Murray?
Aye.
Commissioner Zavaleta?
Aye.
Vice President Anderson?
Aye.
Did one more call? President Sklar? Aye. Yeah, I didn't vote. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Sherry. With that, we're moving on to item number 19, which is providing water for fish and their habitats. I'm going to ask David to read the instructions for commenting on this.
Thank you, President Sklar. If you'd like to provide comment on item 19, providing water for fish, wildlife, and their habitats, please raise your hand now, no later than 9:36. If you're on the Zoom webinar, please use the raised hand function. If you are on using the phone only, please use *9 to press to raise your hand once to alert us that you'd like to speak. Again, if you'd like to provide comment on item 19, providing water for fish and wildlife and their habitats, please raise your hand now, no later than 9:36. Thank you.
Just a technical thing. We have one Zoom speaker as well, in case that wasn't articulated. But Gary Bobker is on there, so in case he's on.
I'm sorry. Who's on Zoom?
Gary Bobker. Gary should be on Zoom. Thank you.
Okay. And is Gary going to speak at the end after everybody else is done, or first?
Yeah. He'll be
third. Yeah. Okay. Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Part of the presentation. So, commissioners, good morning. Again, this agenda item providing water for fish and wildlife and their habitats is a continuation of a series of presentations that you've received. Your first was from the State Water Resources Control Board in October of this last year. And then in February, you received a presentation from the Department of Water Resources. These presentations have been an opportunity for you to learn more about how other agencies and organizations are involved in water management in California that affects water that's available for fish and wildlife. And this series of presentations was at your request to learn more about that. This group, the Bay Delta Flows Coalition, are some of the nonprofit and tribal organizations that are also involved in the conversations around providing water for fish and wildlife. And so they have a presentation that they're giving today. It is in your supplemental handouts as well. And I will hand it over to Chris, or Scott, I'm sorry, who's going to go first?
Chris is going to go first.
Okay, thank you. And I believe we have a presentation that needs to be brought up.
Crystal Moreno with the Shingle Springs Band of Miwok Indians. I am the Traditional Ecological Knowledge Program Manager, and I work on behalf of tribal leadership. The Vice Chair, Melissa Tayaba, is also the director of my department. And I also work, and serve at the pleasure of our chairwoman, Regina Cuellar. So I'm here today on behalf of tribal leadership. You hear the name Shingle Springs Band and you think, well, Shingle Springs, that's 40, 45 miles east of here. But, you know, because of what happened to tribes in the state of California, right, displacement, genocide, removal, really the tribes' ancestral territory spans 7 California counties, Sacramento being a major county. Our tribal leadership's grandmother was born at the village of Pashune, which is at the confluence of the Sacramento and American River. You know it today as Discovery Park. So the tribe has very deep connections to the waterways, to this land. We like to call it our ecocultural landscape. We're still here. We still come back to these village sites, to these waterways, to practice culture, right? Whether it's ceremony, whether it's gathering the plants, the fish, the wildlife attached to these ecocultural landscapes, these things are very important to us and they're deeply connected to us. When we talk about how tribes have been left out of conversations in terms of water management, It's something that is not a one-time occurrence. It's something that occurs over and over again. We show up, and this is my first time here in front of you. So again, thank you for having us, and I hope to continue these conversations and build relationships here. I think it's important. But when I talk about tribes being left out, it's more often than not that it happens. We spend resources, we spend an incredible amount of time talking with folks, providing our tribal input, our perspectives, sharing our traditional ecological knowledge, right, which is about our lifeway. We've been connected to these rivers and landscapes since time immemorial. If Vice Chair was here today, she would tell you what happens to the fish happens to us as tribal people. And that is a firm belief. Salmon and other wildlife are part of our creation stories. The interconnectivity cannot be, you know, underspoken. It is just a reality for us. So when the state makes decisions on water management and we're not listened to, when the government-to-government consultation is not meaningful, when it's a check-the-box exercise, all the things that we're connected to get hurt. When we take our tribal youth back to village sites and the waterways are so degraded that we cannot even allow them to go into the water to practice culture, that is something that's a violation to tribes. We feel like we are being, it's an impediment to being who we are, our identity, our ability to pass that knowledge down to the next generation of youth. We don't look at ourselves as separate from water, and we don't look at land as separate from water. We are all connected. The water either nourishes or doesn't. The landscape, the animals, the wildlife, everything that we use in culture and our ways of life. It's so important that, you know, even we want to talk about state agencies. At the water board level, we've engaged with them on trying to get tribal beneficial uses protected on the books. We've had an incredible challenge there. We even had to run two separate bills on TBUs, on the protection of TBUs, to get the water board to actually do something. Meaningful consultation, in our opinion, means there's action attached to that. These conversations need to be more than conversations. We need to see what gets implemented, what comes out of the conversations. Otherwise, it's just a waste of our time, and we feel deeply disrespected. You know, we should not be less valued than any other stakeholder. And we're not even considered stakeholders. We should be considered, right, sovereign nations, but we're treated like stakeholders and in some instances less than stakeholders. We have a proposal at the water board level called the voluntary agreements moving forward, which would mean less in stream flow in our river systems. We already know what that means for our fish and our wildlife. We know what it means for our tribal communities. Our fish need more water, not less, to survive. We talk about habitat. Foundational to habitat is water. We cannot restore habitat. We cannot recover habitat. Salmon species, our wildlife, if we don't have the water that's needed to sustain them. You know, we talk about salmon as a traditional food source. Every ceremony that the tribe has, and I would say we have maybe upwards of 10 ceremonies every year, salmon is a key component of those ceremonies. We bring salmon into the community. We feed our elders. We feed our children. We need the salmon to be healthy. We need the salmon to be here. We need them to be restored, recovered, and alive. So, you know, we're here today to just kind of urge you all to help us in our efforts for meaningful consultation. We think that you have a critical role here. We think that we can maybe even together create a model where we're showing how meaningful consultation can create change for tribes and for our communities. Thank you.
I just want to make a quick comment before we go into the next speaker. And we'll get to what our recommendations are at the end of this, but really appreciate you being here. We really appreciate your comments, align with them completely. It's not the same, but this commission hasn't been consulted in some of the ways we should be on some of this from these other agencies. I can't apologize. I mean, I can't do anything. You know, I'm not here to apologize for them. They have to correct these kind of consultations. I do know that from the governor on down through the secretary and the director and our commission, we're really deeply committed to doing better on tribal consultations and partnerships, because that's really what it is. It's a partnership between us representing one sovereign entity and the tribes representing each individually their own sovereign entities. We have a long way to go to do better. I wish Commissioner Hausler-Carmerson was here. She's worked tirelessly on this. This commission's been really dedicated to it, and that doesn't mean we haven't failed. we do regularly on this. But I, you know, I just wanted to say that from the bottom of my heart that we always want to do better. And hearing from you in more detail in instances where we failed will be helpful. And then when we get the recommendations, I have some thoughts on how we can improve this. Yeah. So thank you for being here today.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm always happy to speak more with you one-on-one.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Please.
Can we go to the next slide or the presentation? Well, I'll just start. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Devin Pierce, and I'm the lead scientist at Friends of the River, which is a statewide organization that advocates for California's rivers. And before that, I was working at the National Marine Fisheries Service, Southwest Fisheries Science Center, as a research scientist for about 20 years. And can we go to the next slide? So I suspect many of you have seen this figure before, but this is our I wanted to put this here to remind us of what we've really lost to dams. This is representing over 90% of the habitat that salmon and steelhead were able to spawn in is now inaccessible to them. And what that does is not just affect them, but it affects all the ecosystem that depends on those rivers, really disconnecting those upland habitats from the downstream habitats that are so critical. And this has happened over the last 100 years or so, primarily, but there was a really big boom of dam building in the middle of the century. So these are mostly about 50-year-old dams. And what we're seeing now are the long-term impacts. Next slide. This is a really important figure that shows what we're essentially imposing on the ecosystem of a permanent drought. So the top slide shows you what would be the unimpaired flows, what the ecosystem experienced for many thousands of years prior to our interventions and impacts. Across different water years, what the total flow that would have come down through the delta would have been. And you can see that there are a mixture of years, some wet years, some dry years, only one really critically dry year. But when you move to the bottom slide and see what is actually experienced by the ecosystem because of the water we removed from the system, you can see two things. First, every year is lower. We're pushing many years that would have been normal, below normal years into being dry or critically dry years, year after year after year. And so from the perspective of fish and other organisms that are in the ecosystem, they're experiencing drought many, many more years than they would have experienced. The other thing you can see clearly is that is an increasing trend of decreasing flows. So clearly that line that's decreasing year after year is not sustainable. If you follow it out, it leads us to a place we can't go. So we need to stop that decline, and we need to reverse that decline and provide more flows to the ecosystem to alleviate that. Next slide, please. This is another thing I suspect you're familiar with, but I wanted to highlight the variation that's really important. So a lot of our emphasis is on salmon. I will talk about other species in a minute. And here we can see that in almost every month of the year that salmon have needs, either as adults, juveniles, or as eggs in the gravel. And under a framework of the Endangered Species Act, where you're managing often for just one, winter run here is often being very targeted, it can be important to note that you're leaving unmet needs for the other species. And so that very intense management focus on single species is really not the right approach for our rivers. And that's one of the things we're here to encourage you, is to look at additional avenues where water management can be more encompassing of different species needs and diversity. Next slide, please. So I mentioned there are other species that we're very concerned about. And while salmon receive a lot of our attention and are a very important fishery, many of these other species have needs, very high flow needs, that are not being met currently and that are really not protected. So that as additional projects are coming online in the future or proposed, we're very concerned that these high flows, which are critical, for example, white sturgeon, which need to have high flows as frequently enough, not every year, but frequently enough that they're going to have successful spawning and reproduction, often enough to keep those populations going and growing. And the same is true for longfin smelt, for bay shrimp, and for many other species that we haven't really enumerated, but we understand that the ecosystem needs those flows and relies on those flows. And these high flows are rarely achieved in the current system, and again, they're not protected by minimum required flows currently. So as additional projects are able to extract more water from the system, we could see very significant decreases in the frequency with which we get high flows. And with that, I want to pass it to Gary Bobker to talk to you some more, and he's online, so we need to go to him. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Devin. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead, please.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Bopker, Program Director at Friends of the River. You know, clearly the status quo for fish resources that you're charged with protecting is in terrible shape. I don't think I need to enumerate the status of the populations or the fishery or the fisheries that depend on healthy populations. As Devin has talked about, and there's a huge scientific record that demonstrates the importance of flows as a primary driver and master variable affecting the health of ecosystems and the species in those ecosystems. Higher flow periods support positive population growth. When things are bad, we're trying to limit the damage. But you know, when it's dry, you don't expect really good conditions for fish. Their opportunity to rebound is when it's wetter. So that leads us to two problems. The first is that the regulatory baseline is not getting better. You know, the State Water Board is looking at voluntary agreements. I've been a harsh critic of them, but I'm not here to debate them with you. The point is that whether you, proponents of the voluntary agreements agree, it's an experiment. There's a huge record that the department has compiled showing how important flow is, but we're going to defer those flows. Maybe the commission needs to look at the impact of doing that and whether that places at risk the public trust resources that you're supposed to protect. Maybe think about what you should do about that. ESA minimum requirements. Well, that's both a federal and state responsibility, and we've seen the federal government is retreating from some of those protections, unilaterally changing some of their commitments under the ESA, not meeting some of those commitments. And in fact, we also rely just on, you know, baseline requirements or agreements in our rivers, but from rivers from the Merced to the Kern to North Coast rivers, rivers can go dry simply because the use exceeds the protection. So the baseline protections are not getting better. That's a big problem. We're concerned about climate change. Obviously, that's really important. Don't know if it's going to be hotter, wetter, or hotter, drier. Smart to plan for hotter, drier, but we can make some bad decisions if we rush to judgment. The assumption right now among many projects and regulators is that we just need to take more water, you know, when it's really wet. Well, that's taking water when it's really wet makes sense, but if you take water other than in true flood conditions, just whenever peak flows occur, you're essentially robbing the ecosystem of its opportunity to rebound. And there are so many, cumulatively, the impacts of so many proposals pending and future to increase our storage capacity with new reservoirs, to increase our conveyance capacity with new conveyance systems, to loosen the rules for diverting flood flows. All of these cumulatively could have a devastating impact. And you really need to look at what these projects and policies will do to the resources that you're protecting. If you don't, then I think you're exposing yourself to huge risk and the resources that you're responsible for. I'll hand it off to Scott now.
Thanks, Ed. Hello, commissioners. Scott Webb here, Director of Advocacy Engagement with the Resource Knoll Institute. I'll be brief. Many stakeholders, as we've seen here, including tribes, commercial and recreational fishing groups, environmental justice communities, and our rivers, have not been adequately represented in some of the most consequential water policy decisions we're seeing here in California. You, as the commission, as you know, are responsible for listing species that need protection. Yet you have not been adequately engaged by other state agencies on the habitat condition that these species need to survive. However, the commission already has tools in the toolbox that could allow for oversight authority and engagement on influencing the habitat of fish and wildlife as it pertains to rivers. Some examples. We have mentioned the dais in the past. We have Fish and Game Code 5931, 5933, 5935, 59237, and many other codes that allude to examples where the commission could potentially have some type of oversight authority regarding fish and wildlife as it pertains to rivers. These tools exist on the book. Many are untested. Many are misunderstood, and I would argue many are vastly underutilized. The time, I would say, is now to investigate what that authority actually means and how it can be used to better protect fish and wildlife and ensure that these stakeholders that you've heard from today are adequately represented when it comes to California water policy.
You have heard us, many of us say, and many of you on the dais have also mentioned previous meetings, there are major projects and plans that will have generational impacts to fish and wildlife in California, such as the Delta Conveyance Project, Sites Reservoir, Healthy Rivers Landscapes, as mentioned as the voluntary agreements, that the commission hasn't had the opportunity or capacity, frankly, to weigh in on. And that must change. I suggest two steps to achieve a more informed and engaged commission. First, I request that the commission send a letter, alluding to what President Sklar just mentioning, to some of our sister agencies, stating that the commission's intent to engage more in these issues and request improved consultation on major water and habitat decisions that the commission considers in its listing and conservation work. To be clear, we are not asking the commission to take a position on any project. We are asking you to be a part of the conversation as these decisions are being shaped and to independently assess whether gaps in protection for public resources exist. Second, and this is something that will take time, I'm aware, we are also asking you to convene a stakeholder working group or a stakeholder workshop in 2027 to explore the fish and game codes that relate to the commission's potential oversight authority. This working group, as we've seen in the ocean size, could consist of tribal governments, commercial and recreational fishing groups, environmental justice advocates, conservation organizations, small farmers, and this commission could help clarify the tools you have to identify the gaps. This is necessary to change this paradigm so you don't hear us come to you over and over again about the same problems. Voices that have been left out, especially tribal voices, need to be centered in California water policy. This commission has a unique opportunity to change that paradigm and convene around this issue. We look forward to working collaboratively with you, and thank you so much for the opportunity to present today.
Great. Thank you. Sherry, how many speakers do we have on this?
We have six.
Okay, let's give them 2 minutes each. I want to add one more thought to the two recommendations that Scott had, which is a third. We don't have the chair of the tribal committee here today, but what I would ask, Ms. Moreno, is that perhaps at our tribal meeting in August, you come and request that the tribal committee be the input place on these issues for on water issues, and then it can come back to us to actually, depending on where that plays out and what the chair of the committee wants, we can do that.
Sure.
Obviously, in recommendation two, it very explicitly recommends the tribal involvement, so it wouldn't be just at the tribal committee, but it's also important to have that happen there.
Absolutely. I'd be okay. Happy to.
Great, thank you. So I just want to put that on the table. Let's go to the speakers, please. 2 minutes each.
Okay. Will Barry Nelson please approach the lectern in the room?
Hi, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. Barry Nelson, Golden State Salmon Association. I'm going to speak fast with a two-minute limit. You know that the salmon fishing industry has been shut down for the last three commercial salmon season, and recreational season has been virtually shut down as well. That has had enormous effects. People have lost their boats. Families have broken up. People have lost their businesses. People are in danger of losing their homes. Our salmon fishing heritage is in jeopardy in California the way it is. It never has been. Why is that? If I were to point to a single reason, it is the 95% decline in wild spawning salmon on the Sacramento River. We've seen other declines elsewhere, but if you look at the main stem of the Sac, the most important river in California for salmon fishing, the decline in wild spawning has been catastrophic. Why have we had that decline? Because during the last drought, we had two problems, disastrous temperature conditions, disastrous flow conditions. And I'm just going to focus on flow. I'd be happy to talk about temperature, too. We do not have outmigration standards in California for fall run salmon, or for any salmon run, really, in the Central Valley. Salmon outmigrate during high flows. That's what they evolved to do. We have taken those flows away in more and more years, as you saw in our presentation. Without those standards, we're going to lose California's most important wild runs. And those wild, we haven't just lost to a sort of a new baseline. Those out-migration flows that juvenile salmon depend on are targeted by storage projects, conveyance projects. They're being targeted in the legislature right now, with the goal of those projects being to take those flows away from California's rivers and from salmon runs and other species as well. I'm just talking about salmon now. It really is pretty straightforward. If we and to a certain extent, I don't blame those project proponents. If the state of California doesn't have standards that say these are essential flows for ecosystem health and survival of salmon fishing, of course they're going to target those flows. If we don't have standards, we're not going to have adequate flows. We're going to lose our salmon runs, and the fishing industry will follow. Thank you.
Anna Bassius, go ahead, please.
Good
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Anna Basias, and I am a legal and policy intern with the Environmental Action Committee of West Marin, or EAC. EAC works to protect marine biodiversity in West Marin and beyond. We also engage in statewide policy, and it is critical that these vulnerable species habitats be protected in all California waterways. We'd like to echo our colleagues' comments regarding the inequities in California water management and the fish and wildlife emergency presented by the lack of habitat availability in the Bay Delta estuary. As has been outlined in the presentations by our colleagues, there are seven species already listed whose primary habitat is in a permanent drought due to the large-scale flow alterations that occur in the Bay Delta, as well as hundreds more that are affected by the level of in-stream flows across the state. In-stream flow is habitat for these species. Since diversions began, the population of species like the Delta smelt, longfin smelt, and striped bass have seen all-time lows, as their migration and breeding patterns are directly dependent on water levels in their endemic habitats and ancestral migration pathways. Habitat restoration cannot substitute for the presence of water in the rivers, which is something we've also observed in our local fish populations when water is diverted. Existing protections in the Bay Delta are inadequate to protect both the variety of species affected and the severity of their plight. We ask that the Commission promptly and formally consider the major decisions that will impact California's fish and wildlife, including the Bay Delta Plan, the Delta Conveyance Project, and the Sites Reservoir. As the Commission determines species protection under California law, it must have adequate briefing and consultation on species habitat and conditions before giving recommendations on how much water should reach California rivers and the Delta. The public entrusts the Commission with that responsibility, and we support the Commission in asking other agencies for earlier consultation and more substantive briefings as necessary. Thank you for your consideration of this important issue amid competing priorities.
Joy Hano, go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Joy Hano, Communications Manager for Fish On. I want to first acknowledge that water use is regulated by multiple agencies, and these processes are difficult to track and navigate. However, there are implications for many species that our community of anglers enjoy and depend on. California's native fish, including salmon, are important to our community, not to mention the cultural significance of salmon and other threatened species like Delta smelt to tribal communities. As water needs and rights are considered, it will be important for the Commission to weigh in on these issues to ensure the health of these important fisheries are a part of the decision-making process. Thank you.
Tricia, go ahead, please.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. Good morning. My name is Tricia Velasquez. I'm the Central Valley Organizer at Save California Salmon. I'm speaking today to support the presenters that have already spoken to you, and to urge the Commission to step into your vital role in protecting native species by coordinating more with other agencies. I particularly want to emphasize the importance of effective water management and adequacy of flows for the protection of native fish and wildlife species, which, as Crystal Moreno discussed, are essential to tribes for subsistence, cultural and traditional practices, and more. Despite this, tribes are still far too often excluded from meaningful engagement and decision-making, and we ask that the Commission use your roles to remedy this in every way you can and begin working more directly with tribes and other agencies to ensure that water management and related policies are enacted in a way that provide adequate protection for species. Thank you.
Mary Butterwick, go ahead, please. Mary, you need to unmute.
Yes, my name is Mary Butterwick. I'm a retired botanist and resident of San Francisco. I'm here today because the Bay Delta and its tributaries are in ecological crisis due primarily to insufficient flows. With seven endangered species, closed seasons for fishing salmon, and toxic algal blooms, these are all indicators of extreme degradation. Decisions on the Bay Delta plan and voluntary agreements on the Delta Conveyance Project and on the Sites Reservoir will all have profound impacts on fish and wildlife resources. The public supports the Commission formally asking sister agencies, especially Department of Water Resources and the State Water Resources Control Board, for earlier consultation and more substantive briefings on decisions that determine how much water reaches our rivers and Delta. As you know, flow is habitat, and habitat restoration without sufficient flows simply will not work. Thank you.
CIEA, go ahead, please. You need to unmute.
Thank you very much. Hello, good morning. My name is Sherry Norris. I'm the executive director of the California Indian Environmental Alliance. We work in partnership with tribes in California to support tribal lifeways, including subsistence food and cultural resources. We support the statements made by our colleagues here today, and we join them in encouraging the commission to increase oversight to protect fish and wildlife in planning. Agencies now look at a project footprint area and ignore the source and receiving waters. This has been increasing over the last decade, and the connection of species and anadromous fish species in these decisions are largely ignored. And at the same time, projects for storage and conveyance are being pushed forward, even though the science shows that these new infrastructures cannot enhance and will, in fact, cause the loss of flows needed for the health of the Sacramento River, the Bay Delta ecosystem, and all of the species that depend on it, including human species. The environmental considerations are separated out and considered after the project is approved. And this is backwards, and we urge the Commission to utilize all the mechanisms that you have available to protect aquatic habitat and species in the upper watershed through the Bay Delta and through the Bay Delta before projects are approved and before decisions have been made that will promulgate flow alteration, storage, conveyance, or approval of projects that will increase toxins and reduce flows. On all projects that are or will degrade the aquatic system, we encourage the Commission to ensure that protections can be in place before those projects are approved and before funding is appropriated to initiate those projects, and not as an afterthought that may be considered then infeasible because engineering work has already been done. If the project cannot be afforded protections for the environment, we ask the Commission to strongly oppose such environmentally degrading projects and to use your authority to provide species protection. We really need your voice, your collaboration, and your partnership with tribes and with the public. And we appreciate looking forward to working with you in the future. Thank you so much.
That concludes the speakers who indicated they wanted to speak while the queue was open.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate all the comments and the presentations today. I want to make one thing clear. We're not discussing any project or our judgment on any project. That's not what we're doing here. And I think it's really important to acknowledge, as I did with the effort on the behalf of the governor and the secretary and the department and the commission, our efforts with the tribes, even when they fall short, that the intention is there to do better. And, you know, there have been some incredible accomplishments in the last 8 years under this governor and the previous governor. In particular, the Salmon Recovery Plan is the first of its kind and is really a path forward, number one. Number two, the dam removals up in the northwest portion of the state are historic and were led by this governor and the previous governor and have really made a difference already and set an example for what we can do going forward. So the main thing is we've heard so much for a lot of years now that we have this section of the code where we're supposed to be consulted. I know Commissioner Murray's addressed it before in terms of, you know, on dam projects. It says very specifically we need to be consulted. So that's really where I am right now is let's increase that consultation so that we can weigh in on the projects. It doesn't presume how we're going to weigh in and what we're going to say, but we would be derelict in our duty and ignoring the public's request for us to be consulted when the law requires that. So I think that's really what we're talking about today. I'm supportive of the suggestions, writing a letter, just encouraging them to do what they're supposed to do, which is consult us and have a meaningful dialogue as they go as the other agencies. And this is not a condemnation of them. They've got a huge amount on their plate. These are hugely complex issues. And I'm just asking them to include us the way we ought to be. And I think the idea of a working group, maybe even a little bit premature. Let's hear back from them that letter and see where that goes. Let them take the lead on doing it, and then see whether we need a working group like that. But regardless, I do think that the tribes should very specifically engage at the committee level first, and then see where it goes from there to make sure that we go to that next level and do better on that. So again, I'd like to hear from my fellow commissioners.
Yep.
I just had a question. When DWR came, and maybe this is a question for Melissa or Mike. But when DWR was here in February, which was 4 months ago, I asked them about California Fish and Game Code Section 5933, which is what you're alluding to, where it says whenever there's an application for approval of plans for a new dam in any stream or for the enlargement of a dam in any such stream, whenever that's filed with DWR, a copy of the application is supposed to come to us. We are supposed to, you know, make a decision on whether construction of a fishway over such a dam is necessary for preservation and protection of fish, and then set a date for a hearing within 90 days. And then if we notice that a fishway is required, it is unlawful to commence the construction of the new dam or enlargement of the dam without first obtaining the written approval of us. So I mentioned that to DWR 4 months ago. I asked them to get back to us. Have we heard back from them?
We have not, and I will follow up with them.
Okay. Well, a letter might be a good way to hear back from them as well. Terrific.
Yeah, really, thank you. Vice President Anderson, it looked like you were going to...
Well, and I want to thank you for bringing this forward and, you know, for all the information. You know, right now with everything that's going on as it relates to the Colorado River and the discussions, and I know that the Secretary, as we end this administration, it's one of his top priorities. And, you know, I really admired everything that the Secretary has done at the Governor's priority. But obviously we can do better on all these issues, the tribal consultation, interacting with the fellow agencies. But I think the time is now, as you guys know better than anybody else. You know, this Colorado River negotiation is going to have an impact over the next 50 to 100 years. And that's why I'm so proud of the work that this secretary is doing, fighting for us as a state, making sure that, you know, we're first and foremost with senior water rights, but also looking at the priorities of, you know, species going forward. So thank you for the information today.
Right. So if my fellow commissioner, I'm sorry, please, Commissioner.
Yeah,
Trevlin.
Thanks. I just want to echo the thanks. It was a really, really informative presentation and really echo a lot of the comments my fellow commissioners made. A couple of things I want to add. A master's student at UCSC spent a couple of years looking through decades of Fish and Game Commission minutes for examples of use of some of the code sections that you referenced, including through the, you know, the period of dam building, going back a really long way. And she found the commission has very little history of engaging on flows, you know, beyond the specific code sections you raised in particular. So I think, you know, for a long time, there's been some uncertainty around aspects of it. I mean, some items it's clear we have a role to play, like 5933. Others we've encountered some uncertainty. And so I just want to, I have a question. I want to ask legal counsel to just weigh in on how, what the legal landscape is for what our speakers today referenced and how those uncertainties, like how we navigate those.
That's a broad question. Couple points. The sections that President Sklar and Commissioner Murray had cited, I'll capture them as like 5931 through 5934, I think, are sections that the commission has historically exercised authority under, and I don't think there's a lot of dispute about your authority to exercise that, both based on that historical use and the language of it. 5937 is a section that relates to downstream flows, and I'll note that who can exercise authority under that code section and what legal prerequisites there are for exercising that authority is currently pending before the state Supreme Court. Bring Back the Kern is the named litigant that's first in it, so that's normally just referred to as the Bring Back the Kern case. That case is fully briefed before the state Supreme Court, and while it may not be the end of the case as a whole, you would expect that there still would be oral arguments before the court and then time for the court to enter a decision. Like, that's in the landscape of legal litigation at that level, that's relatively recent being within the next year, maybe. That case, if you're talking about the broader scope beyond that suite of 5931, is significant and would be very informative of, like, who can do what and how they can accomplish it, including the commission's, some of the commission authorities.
Great. Thanks, Jan. Thanks, Mike. That's really, really helpful. And the timing is good in relation to the proposal to have a 2027 working group convened. So I'm really happy to hear that. Couple other things. I know it's already been said, but, you know, this has to be a priority for us. I mean, there are the seven species of fishes. It's the species. It's the ability of members of the public to enjoy wildlife and healthy ecosystems. It's also food systems and lifeways. And That's true both for tribal nations and their traditional systems and lifeways and the broader contributions fisheries make as food systems in California alongside agriculture. I think we just need to remember that, like, this is not wildlife against food. It's actually food all around. I won't repeat other things other folks have set up here, but I want to support both the proposed actions, the letter and the working group, and to just suggest two more. One around tribal consultation, it has to happen, and not just as a box-checking exercise. So I would like to explore ways that we could just get a review of the status of whether those government-to-government consultations are occurring with California tribal nations in accordance with the current consultation policies here at the Commission and at the Water Boards and Water Department. The other, I realize, is kind of an aspirational thing at the moment, given the current climate, but I think it's really important we just give voice to it. We really need another staff position on the Commission to be able to do justice to these issues. We need another staff position on the wildlife side to work on fish and aquatic systems, because it's too much, in addition to all the terrestrial wildlife for our wildlife advisor, and because it cuts across the freshwater and the marine sides of the work that we do, so it's kind of a cross-cutting piece that is difficult to coordinate when we're not currently set up that way. So I just want to put that out there as something that I think would enable us to do right by the growing need to address these issues as climate change makes things drier, as withdrawals increase. I'm really excited that there's energy around paying more attention to this and shedding some light on it, and I hope that we can do all of the things you suggested and more. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, commissioners. Let me summarize a little bit, and that is, and if anybody disagrees with this way going forward, let me know. One is, again, I think it's really the tribal committee where the discussion ought to start, as you described under the suggestion, even though we need to have that information come to the full committee. So I would recommend, A, that we write that letter. I'd like the commission to give me the authority to write that with the director and staff, just requesting what we've already requested, basically, as you said. Number two, not make a decision on the working group yet. Let's get that letter back. Let's see how they respond, because I think that'll inform that much better. Three, that ask the you as a representative of your tribes, but also if you have any other colleagues who want to do that as well from other sovereign nations, go to the tribal committee and start that dialogue there, and then with the intention that it come back to us. Finally, asking the staff on the water thing, you're asking specifically to have them report back to us. Can you explain that again?
Are you referring to my suggestion that we create another staff position?
Commission? I'm sorry. Let's add that, because we all have to do this kind of on our own and together and collectively and stakeholders. Let's add that to the list of positions that we are fighting for, because I think it's worth doing that. I think it is a hugely complex issue. And this will take years.
Again, just to be clear, as a priority, my priority is the tribal position first.
Yeah.
And if 100%. We get to it, agree. Then, because that position, as I said yesterday, needs to be replaced.
Yeah. Yeah. You're singing to the choir on that, yeah. Having fought for that position in the first place and continuing fighting for it. So, yeah, we'll put that into the mix then, that's okay. So is everybody good with that approach?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right. Thank you all. And thank you all for the presentation. I really appreciate it. We're going to take a 10-minute break and come back at 10:25. We are returning to the California Fish and Game Commission meeting of June 2026, and we're up on item number 20, rather. We're not going to ask for public comment on this because we've closed the record on this, so we're not going to give those usual comments. But I would like Ari just to introduce this item, and then we'll get right into it.
Thank you, President Sklar and commissioners. This item is to consider the petition, the department's petition evaluation, and comments received to determine whether listing the northern and southern populations of western spadefoot as threatened and endangered species respectively under the California Endangered Species Act may be warranted. If the commission determines that listing may be warranted, western spadefoot would become a candidate for listing, take of the species would be prohibited until a final listing decision is made, and a one-year status review would commence. Just to note, President Sklar said before, this item was first considered by the commission last meeting when the commission heard public comment and then closed the administrative record and continued deliberations to today's meeting. As a consequence, there are no written comments, and public comment on this subject for today is closed. I did want to mention, just for the public's information, since it will undoubtedly come up today in today's deliberation, a 2084 a petition was submitted to the commission regarding a 2084 rule for certain solar projects, and that petition is available, and it includes an attachment including suggested regulation text. That item can that petition can be found in item 24B, which is new petitions item in the meeting materials for this meeting. That's under item 24B if anyone wants to see the petition and the suggested regulatory text. Finally, if there are any questions regarding Western Spadefoot, Austin Roy from the department is on Zoom and is available to answer any biological questions about Western Spadefoot. And I think that's all.
Great. Thanks, Ari. I'm going to take the prerogative here. And we've been contacted by the petitioner, and we've heard from stakeholders, and we've had this petition on the 2084. It's going to be my suggestion that we continue this to our next meeting to allow those parties to try to work out a 2084. Would we need a motion? I think we would, right? Mike shaking his head, yes. Okay, so unless there's any comments that want to be made, I'm going to make that motion, if I may.
I want to make a brief comment, at least. I think we actually put in the motion at our April meeting out of a desire to have the 2084 happen alongside this decision, that we were comfortable continuing it to this meeting specifically and not beyond it. And so while I want to respect the petitioners and the folks who are petitioning with this new regulatory language, I want to respect their support for continuing it again, and to just go ahead and articulate that I do think that, you know, the reason that the law gives us 90 days is because of the concern about anticipatory take, and that is a concern. So I'll support it. I don't want to continue it to a future meeting generically. I want to continue it to August. And I really want to sort of express gratitude that we have language, because I am not comfortable pushing it sort of indefinitely down the line. So my hope is that we have it ready to go alongside at least the possibility of considering the 2084 in August.
I appreciate those comments, and I agree. This is not an indefinite process. Should not be. In general, they should get it. You know, the party should get it done. But we leave it to them largely, because that's the right thing to do. Let the petitioner and the parties work it out. In this case, they just didn't get across the finish line in time. But I agree with your general sentiment. So I'm going to move that we continue this to our August meeting.
Second.
Roll call, please. Motion made by me, seconded by Vice President Anderson. Roll call, please.
President Sklar?
Aye.
Vice President Anderson?
Aye.
Commissioner Zavaleta?
Aye.
Commissioner Murray?
Aye.
Great. The motion passes unanimously. We're on now to item number 21. And just a reminder that we've continued item 22. So anybody who, I should have said that at the beginning of today, anybody who's here for that, we are not hearing 22 today. So with that committee and department reports, we'll start with the Wildlife Resource Committee. Can we have a call to public comment? And we'll do A and B under the same public request. David?
Yes, thank you, President Sklar. So this is a call for public comment for items 21A and B together. So if you would like to provide comment on those items, please raise your hand now, no later than 10:37. For item 21A, Wildlife Resources Committee, or item B, Department Reports, Wildlife and Fisheries Division, or the Department Ecosystem Conservation Division now, using the if you're participating on the Zoom webinar, please use the raise hand function. On the phone only, please use *9 to raise your hand. Again, for 21A and B together, no later than 10:37, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. With that, I turn to Ari to lead this off.
WRC met on May 14th in Sacramento. Topics covered included mammal trapping, department lands, the private lands management program, annual rulemakings, which include waterfowl and the two salmon packages that we do every year, periodic regulation changes, those included upland game birds and all the big game species. From the meeting, WRC made three recommendations. Number one, to support a future rulemaking regarding mammal trapping based on the department's recommendation made during the WRC meeting. Number two, to support a future rulemaking regarding department lands based on the department's recommendation made during the WRC meeting. And number three, to improve the recommended topics for the September 2026 WRC meeting, which are available in the work plan. The work plan has been updated with proposed topics for September, and if staff has further recommendations for subjects to refer or agendize, we'll bring that to you in August.
Great, thanks, Howard.
So the last thing I want to do is make some space for Commissioner Zavaleta or Vice President Anderson to speak about the meeting if they'd like to.
Okay, terrific. Turn to Directory Deputy Director Dibble. Thank you. Welcome again.
Yeah, thank you. So I don't have an update for you. You can see by WRC and the agenda today and some of the materials you have in there, we're super busy. But I don't have any additional updates for you today, and just keep the meeting moving and hopefully efficient, unless you have questions.
Yeah, just one thing. There was some discussion yesterday, and there's been some discussion additionally about the falconry regulations. I know that with the lawsuit over, that's now going to the revision of those or a review of those regs is going to happen. Is that kind of on your plate, and where does it fall?
Yeah, that's a discussion item in WRC we continue to have as well, that we've been working through that with the litigation ongoing and things happening there. We've been working to address it. We have made some changes, as you recall. Right. We made some based on where we were with that. We continue to get some comments in the public statements or with respect to that, we've continued to work with those parties to ask them what seems to be the issues and to provide us the evidence or the questions that seem to be in concern and the information that they have, and we have yet to receive that.
Right. Okay. I would say that somebody who's a master falconer told me that the only thing the two falconers will agree upon is that the third falconer is wrong, which I that was from them. That was so my advice is really reach out to the California Hawking Club.
We continue to work with them. They have some suggestions and we've been working through and conversations with them. We've met several times actually.
Right.
We kind of have a standing meeting with them to talk about concerns they may have or answer questions around where they are.
Terrific. There's one thing in particular that I'd love to look at, which is this apprentice is doing abatement. It's not explicitly that they can't do it, but it's because it's explicit who can do it. It basically says apprentices can't be involved in abatement. And in my my neck of the woods, Raptors used for abatement is really helpful, and when the grapes are super sweet. A lot of young people in our area would love to be able to participate and learn that so that they can do it on their own when they become a special or master.
That'd
be an interesting one.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We'll look into that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. With that, public comment, please. I'm sorry. Please.
There's one thing that I just recalled that I neglected to put in my introduction. I wanted to circle back on Wolf's presentation because it was specifically requested by the commission previously. And the commission decided that the best forum for that would be WRC. So the department very generously did provide an update and a presentation on wolves at the last WRC meeting. The presentation has been included in your meeting materials under WRC. And if you'd like to see the full presentation with the dialogue included, that's available as normal under on our YouTube page. You can watch the WRC recording and see the whole presentation. So that's now available for the commissioners to see.
So as long as my fellow commissioner is willing to just watch it that way, rather than bring it here, let's not bring it back here. I think that's great. We need to have you do double duty on that information. We got a lot going on. Great. Thanks, Ari. Sherry, how many speakers do we have on this one?
We have no speakers on this item.
All right. We do have a motion on the Wildlife Resource Committee.
So I move that the commission approves the recommendation from the May 14, 2026 Wildlife Resources Committee meeting and approves the work plan as presented in Exhibit 1 plus any further changes discussed today.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion by Vice President Anderson, seconded by Commissioner Zavaleta. Roll call, please.
Vice President Anderson?
Aye.
Commissioner Zavaleta?
Aye.
Commissioner Murray?
Aye.
President Sklar?
Aye. Thank you, unanimous on that one. And so, again, we're not doing 22 today. We're continuing that to a future meeting, which we discussed at the beginning of yesterday. And so we're on to 23, which is Sport Fishing 26. Okay, so back to this. We're looking at sports fishing, inland and marine. And last, ask David to call for public comment on item number 23, please.
Thank you, President Sklar. If you'd like to make public comment on item 23, sport fishing 2026 for inland and marine, please raise your hand no later than 10:44. This is a call for public comment for item 23. If you're on the Zoom webinar, please use the raised hand function. On phone only, use the star 9 function, please. Again, for item 23, no later than 10:44, please. Thank you.
Okay, and just a reminder, this is a discussion hearing. This is not our adoption hearing, so there won't be a motion on this today. It's an opportunity for the public to comment on this during this midpoint in the process. With that, Sherry, how many speakers do we have?
We have 2 so far.
Okay, we'll give them each 3 minutes if they'd like.
Merritt McRae, go ahead, please.
Good morning, President Sklar, commissioners, and staff. I am Merritt McRae for the Sport Fishing Association of California. We represent over 150 U.S. Coast Guard-inspected commercial passenger fishing vessels from Crescent City to San Diego. These are colloquially known as party boats and take over 1 million Californians fishing, whale watching, and bird watching annually. We support the regulatory change proposed to clarify legal methods for measuring finfish with minimum size limits. We concur with the department's observations regarding longstanding practice and the current lack of specificity in current regulations regarding many species of finfish with minimum size specified. This change will provide clarity for anglers and wardens in the field. Thank you.
Thank you,
Brandon Worthington. Brandon Worthington, go ahead, please.
Good morning, commissioners. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
I'll keep this pretty sweet. I'm referencing CDFW's plans to reopen the Klamath River to sport fishing in Section 2B. I'm a Southern Oregon and Northern California fly fishing outfitter that's probably the only outfitter that originates trips in Oregon that terminate in California. And we've been managing the regulatory hurdles between the states for a few years now. And we're really excited that CDFW sees the data to support reopening. We have been on this river for 15 years. We were part of the recreation stakeholder group that helped KRRC design the recreation plan that FERC mandated due to my group's lobbying. And we think the river's ready. So fully support the reopening plans for sport fishing in Section 2B of the new Klamath River. We're seeing really promising results and encourage you guys to go with them. It's pretty cool up there. Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes our speakers.
Okay, commissioners, any discussion or comments on this? Because there's no action today. Seeing none, we're moving on to 24.
President, I just wanted to make one small administrative note for the commission before we end. I wanted to note that staff intends to make a small non-substantive adjustment in section 28.30A, where the word length was inadvertently struck from the phrase total length. So we'll add that back in for the adoption hearing. Just wanted to make you aware of that.
Thank you for that. And I just want, you know, I think this is indicative of the kind of work that the commission staff has to do, right? One word can make a huge difference, right? And so I hope the public appreciates the work that they have to do, because we are primarily a regulatory body. We do lots of other things too. We sit as a quasi-judicial group, and sometimes we, you know, do other things. And CISA has its own set of procedures and rules, as we discussed earlier. But I just want to say that I hope the public appreciates as much as we do the kind of work the staff has to do on the kind of things we do, and how hard it is, and how they get it right almost all the time, and occasionally, you know, and show some grace when they don't, but because we're all humans. But I do want to appreciate that. And Ari, that just really was perfectly emblematic of what everybody needed to see and understand. Melissa, please.
Just so that you can have an image in your mind of the level of detail that our analysts actually do have to go through. It's no joke. It's not unusual to have one at their desk with a print copy of the regulations or the 399 or whatever other rulemaking document they may have, with a ruler side by side with the original and the new version, comparing the two to ensure that it's accurate.
And I don't know, maybe I regret saying this, but you know, an example is that we've talked about bumblebees before. That went to the Supreme Court over a comma, right? And that wasn't us, that was the legislature when they wrote it, right? that left some ambiguity there. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court to decide whether that comma missing was intentional or not. So, yeah, it just, and listen, I thank God for the staff, because that's not my forte, is that kind of detail. I'm a generalist, and I depend on really brilliant people to do this work. So, again, thank you. And I see all my fellow commissioners smiling because I know they appreciate it as well. Okay, with that, we're on to 24. David, please make a call for public comment on all three, A, B, and C.
Yes, sir. Thank you. If you'd like to make public comment on item 24, A, B, and C together, please raise your hand now, no later than 10:48, using the raised hand function on Zoom. Please, for 24 regulation change petitions, wildlife and inland fisheries, A, B, and C together, no later than 10:48, please. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Hari, please.
This is a standing item for the commission to consider regulatory proposals submitted by the public. There are no wildlife petitions for consideration today, but I did want to make special mention of a particular petition being received, which was mentioned before under an earlier item, and that's petition 2026-12 regarding a request to allow the take of Western Spadefoot for certain qualifying solar projects. That's available in the meeting materials if anybody wants to get a look at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ari. Sherry, how many speakers do we have on this?
None so far.
Okay, we'll give another. How much more time do we have? I didn't look at the clock.
One more minute.
Okay, we'll give people another second or two. I mean, I don't think we're going to see anybody there. And again, fellow commissioners, there's no motions required on this because we're just receiving that one petition today. I'm going to move on, but if somebody pops up in the last 30 seconds who wants to speak in this, we'll certainly let them. Which is now under 25, which is non-regulatory requests. And again, David called a public comment, and then Ari after that. And there's no motion. There is a motion around this one that we're going to look at.
Okay. Well, thank you, President Sklar. If you'd like to make public comment on item 25, please raise your hand. Now, no later than 10:50 for item 25, non-regulatory requests from previous meetings, wildlife and inland fisheries, using the raised hand function on Zoom, no later than 10:50 for item 25, please.
Great. Thanks, Ari.
Okay. This standing item is an opportunity to consider action on non-regulatory requests by the public. There are three non-regulatory requests for consideration today. You can find a summary of the staff recommendation of the requests and the staff recommendations that can be found in the meeting materials under Exhibit 1.
Thank you, sir. Sherry, or do we have any speakers so far?
We do not.
Okay. Again, I'm going to move on just because I don't think we'll have anybody come in the next minute or so, but if anybody comes up who wants to speak, we'll certainly let them. We do have a motion on this one. Well, so we have to give it a second or two because we do have a motion. I'm sorry. Is anybody who wanted to speak on this, please step up now. Anybody, Sherry?
No.
Okay, we'll go ahead and accept.
I move that the commission adopts the staff recommendations for non-regulatory requests as reflected in Exhibit 1.
Second.
Motion made by Vice President Anderson, seconded by Commissioner Murray. Roll call, please.
Vice President Anderson?
Aye.
Commissioner Murray?
Aye.
Commissioner Zavaleta?
Aye.
President Sklar?
Aye. Passes unanimously. Now we're going to call for public comment. It was going to be A and B, but given what we're seeing on speakers, I'm going to have you call for A, B, C, and D on this. We do have motions, and so we'll have to kind of jump around a little bit if we get there, but I don't think that's a big issue, not controversial. So, David, call for public comment on 26 A, B, C, and D, please.
All right. I'm happy to. So now is the time to raise your hand if you'd like to please make comments on item 20, the commission administrative items, which is items 26 A, B, and C, and D together. So we'll give about 3 minutes because this will take a little bit of time. We've got a few things to talk about. So let's say approximately 3 minutes. So for items 26 A, B, C, and D together, no later than 10:53. Using the Zoom function, I think everybody's pretty well versed on that. So 1053, please. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Turning to Melissa for the first, which is legislative report, which is item A under 26.
Thank you, President Sklar. So you do have in your meeting materials for today a staff summary and an exhibit from the department with the list of bills that it's following this year and their current status. In your staff summary, we've highlighted the legislative calendar. The budget did get passed on time, and that was shared with the governor. We do have the legislatures continuing to meet until the end of August, and any bills that are passed at that point will go to the governor for potential signature during the month of September. We did identify several bills that are still in play. I believe we have seven, and we've listed them here in the staff summary with their status. With a description of the bill. If you want to follow up on those, more details available either in the department's report and or online on the legislative website. Unless there are any questions, we do have some public comments that were submitted, making some requests for the commission to pay attention to a number of bills and support or opposition for those bills.
Terrific. Thanks, you, Melissa. I think David is leading off, taking us on B.
Yes, thank you, President Sklar, commissioners. So item 26B is a standard agenda item for staff and the department to request changes for the commission's rulemaking timetables. In addition to the brief changes that we had in your meeting materials today, all we have staff requests is just one minor change to the timeline, and that is for the auto conformance package for the federal groundfish and associated species. To simply move the adoption hearing, which is in your meeting materials, from the December meeting up one meeting to October, it was incorrectly identified as December adoption. And the reason for that is that we need to have enough time for the Office of Administrative Law to review it and get it in effect by January 1. So that's all I had for you today.
Great. Thanks, David. I think you're talking about C as well.
He is. If I could add, I just want to emphasize for a moment for the public, especially since this particular rulemaking was mentioned just a moment ago, the federal groundfish rulemaking, also note in the staff summary that we are asking to rename that to process to conform state recreational fishing regulations to federal regulations, including for federal groundfish, making it clear that the associated species, the focus here is not on that. The focus is on federal groundfish.
Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate that. Again, David on C. I'm sorry. I was wrong. Melissa's doing C, I believe. Is that right?
Sorry. Yes. So item C is administrative items, future meetings, and new business. You may recall that you, in conversations about marine protected area petitions and the outcomes of the three MPA meetings that were held, you requested staff to look into scheduling two additional days for the October commission meeting for discussion purposes, specifically for MPA petition discussion purposes. You didn't specify which days. So we do have currently scheduled all 5 days. We have a room held for all 5 days. But we would like to begin planning for which of those days. Sorry, okay. Oh, I saw eyes wide open there. So staff is going to, as we get through this, staff will recommend that the commission meet Tuesday through Friday of that week rather than Monday through Thursday. Otherwise, we'll have staff working on Sunday. So a lot more overtime. So that's the first thing I wanted to highlight. And then also in your meeting materials, as an exhibit to your staff summary, there is a list of potential agenda items for the August meeting, which is August 12 through 13. Obviously, tribal committee meeting is the day before that on the 11th. And so we will ask you to approve that list of potential meeting agenda items as well. Microphone.
We'll get back to that in a second. We come to the motions part of it. Can you also talk about potential meetings for 2028?
I can. So item 26D, our potential meeting dates for 2028. For those who are probably asking, why are you thinking about meeting dates this far in advance? The short answer is meeting facilities and finding meeting facilities that not only could meet the technical requirements for the commission, but also our costs. And our budget is pretty limited for what we can afford. And so when we can't get meetings here in this building or if we're traveling, it can be challenging. So at the moment, our hope is that the budget will improve enough that you will be able to travel for at least some of your meetings. But at the moment, we're just focusing on the dates. This is your the first draft. We'll come back to you in August with a final proposal. But if there are any of these dates that you look at now and you say this is problematic, if you could please share that with staff in the coming weeks, we will begin to draft the next version in about a month.
Okay, well, I'll get back to you in the next couple weeks if there's any conflicts, although it's obviously hard to know that far in advance. We'll do our best.
I just very briefly, Andy, like the December meeting dates in 2028 strike me as rather late. And so although there's probably not a hard conflict, I don't know what I'm doing in 2028 December yet. I just want to suggest the possibility of bumping that up a week to the 13th, 14th. I know it puts it close to MRC, but I kind of have concerns about putting it so close to the holidays.
Yeah, so we did put that there very purposely because of MRC, and if we move that date, we'll need to move MRC as well.
I think that we look at doing that because I think that becomes more of a challenge with the holidays, and so yeah, look at moving both of those as well. But you know, we'll all look at it more carefully and get back to you.
We'd have
to have a discussion.
Pay attention too, because by moving it back the week prior, you put it at the beginning of Hanukkah, as opposed to the week we've placed it. It's at the end of Hanukkah. And MRC, if we move that back a week, we'll need to change the date because Thursday is a holiday. Thursday is a Veterans Day, so it's a federal holiday. And obviously, are not going to hold an MRC meeting. So we would need to also consider moving the day of the week.
Yeah, I would just mention with Hanukkah being a 8 days, it's a little harder to avoid that window than it is some of the other holidays. So, I can say that. Sherry, how many speakers do we have?
We have none.
Okay, then. We have two motions, one on B and one on C.
I move that the commission approves the proposed changes to the perpetual timetable for anticipated regulatory actions as recommended and discussed today.
Well, I'm sorry. Are we going to talk about the October dates?
That's the next motion.
I thought this was B and C.
Yeah, well, no, we'll do it. We'll discuss. Let's do B and then we'll get back to it.
Okay, thank you.
Second.
Motion made by Vice President Anderson, seconded by Commissioner Zavaleta. A roll call, please.
Vice President Anderson?
Aye.
Commissioner Zavaleta?
Aye.
Commissioner Murray?
Aye.
President Sklar?
Aye. Passes unanimously. So now we're on to C and the question of that. And then there's that question of the October meeting. Please, do you want to say on that? Because I would say Tuesday to Friday seems to be right. And then I know there may be some conflict here on those extra days because we, you know.
Yeah, I just hadn't planned Tuesday and Wednesday or Monday and Tuesday, excuse me. And I'm going to have to move some stuff. I haven't been able to move it yet, but I'm trying to do it.
Well, the suggestion here is that we do it Tuesday through Friday. So Monday won't matter, right? But it's a question of Tuesday. We have time because we'll have the August meeting. For you to get back on that and you have some time to do it. But yeah. My suggestion is that because of the staff challenges, Tuesday through Friday makes more sense.
Tuesday to Friday is
and can I just ask
much
a question?
Better for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And how are you going to run the agenda? Is it going to follow the order of the petitions?
You know, that's a great question.
Because
you know,
we did it north, central, south. Are we going to follow that?
It's a great question because we are doing it here. It's not geographic, so it's not as important, although grouping them geographically is probably a little helpful. Let us do this. Get back to us on what you're doing.
Yep.
We know which were the most controversial ones are. Maybe we put those on the day that you're going to be there.
Okay.
Something like that. And maybe because we do have some flexibility of the two, with two full days, which order we do them in. Why don't you leave that? Why don't you get back to us and leave it to Commissioner Murray and I, which work with staff on the ordering of them.
Great. Thank you.
Is that okay?
I think that's good. I'd also like to sort of get the additional evaluations and reports that we're going to get in August because that'll help inform order and everything.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, and if we're adding 2 days, I mean, we can see what we think, but presumably the 2 days are going to be all MPA days, right? And so maybe we can just make those the 2 days that we know Darius is going to be here and he misses the rest of the commission meeting.
Agree.
Because I think it is I mean, I don't want to put a lot of pressure on you, Vice President, but I think it's pretty important that we have all five of us here for voting on MPA petitions.
Yeah, I'll get back to Melissa, you know, on Monday of next week with the final answer.
Okay, great. So we have we're agreeing that we're going to do Tuesday through Friday. Mm-hmm. We're going to get Darius is going to get back to us on his timing, and what we'll do is we'll try to schedule, since it sounds like he can do three of the four for sure, that we'll try to schedule it so that the MPA days are both on days that he's here.
Yes.
And I will check in with Commissioner Hossa-Carmerson on her
as well, please as well. Okay, so can we have a motion then on with that included? Or you can say as discussed just now.
I'll move that the commission approves the draft agenda items for the August 12 to 13, 2026 commission meeting as amended during this meeting. Approves adding, as discussed at this meeting, we're not going to finalize the dates for October 14 through 15 quite yet.
Well, no, we are going to finalize the dates. Tuesday through Friday.
Okay, we're just not going to finalize what happens on okay. which day. So as discussed today.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Zavalletta, seconded by Vice President Anderson. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Zavalletta?
Aye.
Vice President Anderson?
Aye.
Commissioner Murray?
Aye.
President Sklar?
Aye. Passes unanimously. That brings us to our last item, which is 27, public comment. A reminder, now is the time for public comment regarding topics that are not on today's agenda. Please make your way to the podium or raise your hand on Zoom if you wish to speak for items not on the agenda. And Sherry, do we have anybody in the room who presented a card?
We have Jacob Molieri.
And is that it, just one speaker in the room?
So far, yes.
Okay, yeah. Please let us know if anybody's on Zoom as soon as Jacob is done. Jacob, welcome.
Oh, there you go.
Whoa, fancy. Hope you guys are all doing good today. My name is Jacob Molieri. I'm the owner and operator of Snake Out, Inc. I've trained a lot of dogs over the years, so we do mostly the rattlesnake avoidance class for dogs. We're teaching dogs, hey, that's a rattlesnake, don't touch it, leave it alone. But we also do a lot of other stuff. In fact, the Miwok band of Native Americans from the Shingle Springs region, we just did a big thing with their fire department on teaching them how to use the tongs and tools of rattlesnakes. And we do this with all over the state. We actually are doing some stuff with a couple wineries and vineyards around California on teaching them how to deal with rattlesnakes so we can create a better coexistence environment. I'm here today because obviously we are putting the stuff of rattlesnake commercialization onto a new day. And I have so much stuff I could say, but I brought this fancy paper. It was also emailed over there. So there's a copy sent out for you guys to look over. But this is a paper that we basically developed, me along with collaboration with multiple other nonprofits, educational facilities, other rattlesnake avoidance companies, not even just in California, but across the United States, who all sent their recommendations and requests for this. I've trained a lot of dogs. I've trained law enforcement. I've trained SAC PDs. I've trained stuff from Placerville, Grass Valley, Roseville. I've trained dogs at Wing and Barrel, W.D. Anderson. Love your stuff. We've trained a lot of dogs. I've just trained also some ones from the family members from the permitting department. Theirs recently in Cool, and we're going to see them again this next week in Cool. So it's really important. You know, you're talking about 150,000, 300,000 dogs in the United States bit every year by rattlesnakes. It's extremely damaging to the body. I speak from experience. You know, I wouldn't recommend this on anyone. So I'd serve as like a form of trying to tell people, like, we should not let this happen to our pets, let our family. We teach children actively. We respond to bites, calls all the time. We get work with fire departments who don't know how to handle a case because the sad truth is they're not equipped to do it. They don't know how to handle most situations because at the end of the day, it's not CDFW who's going to go underneath a house at 3 a.m. under fiberglass and dust and heat to remove a rattlesnake to just bit a kid or a dog. I know because I just had to do that 2 weeks ago for a kid that just got bit and it went underneath the hot tub and then dove under the deck. And we were there for 2 hours on our hands and knees, and the snake's only 5 feet away from your face. So I don't think any of you guys are going to do that, because I also don't think any of you guys are going to be, you know, hand-feeding baby rattlesnakes. So we bring this forward because it's just a bunch of concerns about how that permit's going to be displayed, how it's going to work, how it's going to be integrated. There's a lot of people who wanted to be in attendance to this meeting, who worked on this, who refused to attend because of fear. And it's a sad truth, whether or not it's justified or not, that is just a thing that the reptile hobbyist community, people who work in the snake avoidance community, nonprofit educators and stuff that work with native species feel currently is due to the actions that were taken on our company back in 23. They're like all bells and whistles. They don't want to get involved now, but they want to supply their comment to us because all our stuff was handled with the SACDA and was dropped. So we're here to just try to, we want to work with you guys. We want to build a framework that works for law enforcement so you guys can keep track of everything. And we want something that works for us so we can just train our dogs, you know. I know I've just went over time, but just one other thing I wanted to say is we want the system that works best. It's just we wanted to bring this forward and present it to you, and we will continue to do that at future meetings because there's a lot of stuff that we worry that is not being considered, like about the husbandry standards and stuff. Because, again, I don't think any of you guys are muzzling a rattlesnake with your bare hands because that's what we have to do for every day, 365.
Great, Jacob. Really appreciate it. We look forward to having the discussion item when we do. And the information you gave us today is really helpful. I wish I'd met you 50 years ago when I came across my first rattlesnake in our vineyard, because I certainly didn't do it right. And haven't many times over the years. And I do have a dog, that goes out in the vineyard with me. So really helpful. And it's a challenge because most people don't think about this until the first time they actually have to deal with it. So the kind of information you're talking about could really, really protect people and their pets. So thank you so much for your effort on this.
Thank you. Yeah, and I just want to say thank you because I do know the importance of your program. You guys do an amazing job and, running a kennel and having all the dogs out there that, the downside of this is the death of a potential animal. And so the work that you do is saving their lives as well as, the folks that are out there as the owners. So bravo to you, and thank you for coming forward and presenting this.
Yeah, and one other side note is we also want to thank you guys for your guys' obviously consideration. We also talked about this, like Michael Starksky from Save the Snakes Foundation. We are all wanting together. We're fine with regulations. We just want to make sure it's done properly so everybody can play by the rules and feel safe and treated equally, because currently that's not how it felt with our case. Because most of the companies right now are like, well, are we supposed to keep using normal colored snakes in the dog class? Because technically it's in this weird gray area, and we were all told it was okay in 2016 from emails from CDFW personnel, but now it's not. So now we're all kind of confused. So we just want to better understand so everyone can operate safely and fairly and not be a legal liability at any moment, basically.
Cool. I just want to thank you for this letter. It's dense with information. There's a lot of firsthand knowledge and expertise in here, and I look forward to further sort of synthesizing and integrating and considering this information when we do talk about it next time. So thanks a lot for putting the time into this.
Don't worry, we'll be back.
Yep. Yeah, thank you, Ms. Murray. I agree fully. Sherry, do we have any speakers online?
Yes, we have three.
Okay, three, 2 minutes each.
Nicole DeSantis, go ahead, please.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Nicole DeSantis with the City of San Diego Public Utilities Department. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. I have brief comments on the petition to expand the California Marine Protected Area of the Cabrillo State Marine Reserve. The proposed MPA expansion overlaps with the federally and state permitted ocean monitoring area for our Point Loma wastewater treatment plant, creating uncertainty about future permit conditions. Any changes to these longstanding permit terms could require multi-billion dollar infrastructure upgrades, affecting wastewater service affordability for the 2.4 million residents we serve. The city has also invested approximately $1.2 billion in the Pure Water San Diego program, which will ultimately provide up to half the city's water supply and relies on continued Point Loma operations under the existing permit framework. Permit changes resulting from the MPA expansion could jeopardize the success of this program and its long-term water supply benefits. Additionally, we share Scripps Institute of Oceanography scientists' concerns that the justification within the petition lacked scientific basis. For these reasons, we respectfully request that the commission deny the petition. We submitted a comment letter last month with further details on our concerns, and thank you so much for your time.
Jeff Edwards, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon or good morning. Mr. President, my name is Jeff Edwards, and I would appreciate your further indulgence with regard to the petition for the listing of the Morro Manzanita. I'm a little unclear about staff's recommendation at this point.
The Morro Bay Manzanita.
You don't have a recommendation yet because this hasn't been an agenda item yet.
Yeah, so there's your answer. We don't have there's not a recommendation yet. It will be come out in the packet when we have the item on the agenda.
Is that for the August meeting, I presume?
It is, yes.
Okay, well, I will then briefly just state that I'm a 50-year resident of Los Osos, and we've been working on conservation since the late 1990s. And as many of you may know, we have a federally approved habitat conservation plan that includes many plants and animals that are covered. And The fact is that with regard to the distribution of the Moro Manzanita in Los Osos, over 90% of that coverage is either in public ownership today or is intended for public ownership by way of its inclusion in a priority conservation area pursuant to the federal HCP and the incidental take permit. So it's my concern is that additional staff time at the county and certainly at the state level, and then how this affects private property owners and the public in general. There is extensive protections and conservation management for the Moro Manzanita. And so I believe that any additional state involvement would be superfluous. So my request of this commission, as you consider the Moro Manzanita in the future, I would ask you to simply rely on the protections that are currently in place. And there is no public purpose served or environmental purpose served with additional regulation, which would be duplicitous. Thank you.
Caller identified as Samsung SMS908U. Probably only the Samsung online here. You need to unmute. Caller identified as Samsung SM. You need to unmute. Your device or your microphone is at the bottom of the Zoom window. You may need to hover your mouse to reveal it, or Samsung SM, can you unmute? President Sklar, this is our last speaker who's having technical difficulties.
Give them another second or two, but if not, we'll suggest to them that they come at the beginning of our next meeting in August to speak at the beginning of public comment when they figure that out.
No, they just raised their hand, but they haven't unmuted yet. Samsung, can you reveal your microphone at the bottom of your Zoom screen? Oh, go ahead, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
we can now. Go ahead, please. Glad you got us.
And I can't hear.
Well, we can hear you. Can you hear us now? Turn your volume up.
Yeah, I can hear you now. Good morning. My name's Rusty DeBersini. I own WD Dog Training and Rattlesnake Aversion Training. I'm just here on the Zoom meeting trying to get figured out what is you guys going to expect from us, because as Jake stated, we're out there every day training the public, humans, dogs, to stay safe from the rattlesnakes. You know, we're going out catching these things at all times of days and nights, and it's a huge public service and safety for the general public. I do this for the firefighters. I've done it at your guys' facility in San Bernardino, and I'm just trying to figure out what you guys are going to want from us, because quite frankly, none of us want to get in trouble. We all want to serve the public and do the public a good service and keep the public safe.
Yeah, great. Thank you. You know, we are going to we can't really discuss it much today because we're going to talk about it when it's on the agenda item next time. But I appreciate that and encourage you to come for that. And I think that it's fair to say that you have our attention, and we all understand the complexity. There's also, you know, question of resources, because to do it right would be a huge public information campaign. But we'll see what we can do and look forward to the further discussion. And really appreciate the long memo that we'll all read. So with that, I think that's it, Sherry. No speakers?
That was our last speaker.
Great. Want to thank everybody for a great meeting and thank that everybody from the department and staff and the public who's been here today and my fellow commissioners. We have one meeting before our next meeting, which is the MRC meeting, which will be in Sacramento and San Diego in the middle of July. And then we'll see you back here in August. But thank you very much. The meeting's adjourned.